The IE America Radio Network.
Providing you with informative and entertaining programs, this is the IE America Radio Network.
This is the IE America Radio Network News Break, your significant news source.
This is Don Waller in New York. The White House yesterday drew up emergency plans to accelerate the transfer of power in Iraq after being shown a devastating CIA report warning that the guerrilla war was in danger of escalating out of U.S. control. The report, an appraisal of situation commissioned by the CIA director and written by the CIA station chief in Baghdad, said that the insurgency was gaining ground among the population and already numbers in the tens of thousands. One military intelligence assessment now estimates the insurgent strength at 50,000. An intelligence source in Washington familiar with the CIA report described it as a bleak assessment that the resistance is broad, strong, and getting stronger. With casualties mounting in Iraq, jumpy U.S. soldiers are becoming more aggressive in their treatment of journalists covering the conflict. Media people have been detained, news equipment has been confiscated, and some journalists have suffered verbal and physical abuse while trying to report on events. Although the number of incidents involving soldiers and journalists is difficult to gauge, anecdotal evidence suggests it has risen sharply in the past 2 months. The president of the Associated Press Managing Editors sent a protest letter to the Pentagon on Wednesday, urging officials to immediately take steps to end such confrontations. National Guard soldiers fighting in Iraq and Afghanistan are also battling with their own government over long delays and widespread errors in their paychecks, according to congressional auditors. The GAO says in a study to be released on Thursday that some activated Army National Guard soldiers saw delays of up to 3 months in their pay, while others were overpaid an average of $48,000 and told later they had to pay it back. Responding to the study, the Defense Department vowed to correct the problems and conduct a broader review to improve the systems involved. More IE American Network news after this.
We were just driving to school. Yeah, the music was loud. And we were all talking. I thought I had everything under control. Until I hit that kid in the crosswalk.
Please, look for pedestrians. Stop for them.
Think of the impact you could make. A message from the Federal Highway Administration.
A South Carolina man had an uninvited house guest this week, a 3-foot alligator. Michael Hunt found the alligator in his garage Monday afternoon. He quickly hit the button to close the garage door after the gator growled at him, rushed into his house, and dialed 911. Orangeburg County Animal Control officers removed the reptile, and it was relocated in one of the county swamps. It's not clear how or why the juvenile reptile made its way into the garage. Hunt said he was most concerned about the safety of children who could have stumbled across the gator. This is Don Waller in New York.
This has been the IE America Radio Network News Break, produced by TakeBackTheMedia.com. For more information, visit IEAmericaRadio.com or TakeBackTheMedia.com.
Honey, I have got just what you need.
I've heard that before.
No, it's DayQuil. It'll help your cold symptoms so you can get back your energy.
Really?
You could even go shopping.
Shopping.
Designer handbags are 90% off.
Yeah, because we're out of dog food.
DayQuil. The non-drowsy, stuffy head, sore throat, coughing, aching, fever help get back your energy. Medicine. Use it directed. And now it lasts 50% longer.
Like a bad tamale, Halliburton, Inc. keeps repeating on us. This massive military contractor has a long history of weaseling into war deals that reap huge profits for the company's owners and executives. During the Vietnam years, its Brown & Root subsidiary pumped money into Lyndon Johnson's campaign coffers and then drew billions of dollars from us taxpayers in profiteering funds from that war. Then, with Dick Cheney as its CEO in the 1990s, it grew even fatter on military deals, including getting Iraqi contracts to repair Saddam Hussein's war-torn oil industry. Now, Cheney has moved up to vice president, Saddam has been declared the Great Satan, our troops are in an ongoing war in Iraq, But there's Halliburton, still weaseling, still profiteering. Cheney's old company, which puts more than $150,000 a year into his bank account, was first in line to get taxpayer funds from the Bush-Cheney regime for rebuilding Iraq. Of all the companies in the world, the Cheney-connected Halliburton got the non-bid contract to import gasoline into Iraq. So far, it has been paid $700 million for this chore, with the money coming not only from U.S. taxpayers, but also from a United Nations fund meant to provide humanitarian aid in Iraq. Lest you think Halliburton is humanitarian, it has been caught gouging everyone involved. The company is charging $1.59 a gallon for the gasoline that it delivers from countries close around Iraq. Well, says Halliburton, it takes a lot to distribute fuel in a war environment. We might swallow that, except that an Iraqi oil agency is able to get gasoline from the same sources, deliver it in the same war environment, and charge only 98 cents a gallon. This is Jim Hightower saying, hey, Halliburton, in war, when the bugle blows, you're supposed to charge, not overcharge.
Get things in my mind, and I say, let's try this.
Here's Nancy in the background. Nancy.
Oh,
Nancy.
Am I on the air? Oh.
Hello.
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 Sorry.
You're sorry you're on the air?
I'm glad I didn't say something I really shouldn't have said.
Really?
You should have heard what she was telling me a minute ago.
Wow.
Bite me, doughboy.
On the IE America Radio Network.
Providing you with informative and entertaining programs, this is the IE America Radio Network.
Calling for a rapid and radical return to the old values that made America great, the values of democracy on which this country was founded, here's Tom Hartman.
Greetings, patriots, lovers of democracy, truth, and justice, believers in the American way from coast to coast. Welcome. This is Tom Hartman on the IE America Radio Network, the nation's largest nationally syndicated daytime progressive talk show, defending America from the conservative weapons of mass deception. Today, day 122, in the search for the traitor. The person in the White House, the senior administration official who committed, in the words of George Bush Sr., treason. Well, what does Junior have to say about it?
We're going to find out.
He says.
And I don't know. We're going to find out. The senior administration official. Now, this is a large administration, and there's a lot of senior officials. I don't have any idea.
But the fact of the matter is, there's a felon in the White House, perhaps somebody who has committed treason. And it's time something be done about it. We, as Joe Wilson said, we can't let this thing slide. Today is day 277 of the search for weapons. And the reason why we can't let it slide is because one in the key element of American democracy is the rule of law. The thing that makes America a republic rather than a pure democracy, a republican democracy or a democratic republic, is that we have this constitutionally defined limits on what government can do, and we agree to the rule of law. The rule of law defining our republic, and one of those laws is that when you have somebody who's putting their life on the line to protect the United States of America through our intelligence services, you do not out them. And you particularly do not do it for vicious political purposes. You do not do it to score political points or to scare people in the other party. You don't do it for payback or revenge. It's a felony. It is high crimes and misdemeanors. It may well meet the definition of an impeachable offense, and somebody in the White House, perhaps Dick Cheney, perhaps George Bush,
is the spider at the center of this web. And this, as John Dean said, this is a cancer on the presidency. Something, this has to come out. Day 122 of the search for the White House leaker who outed Valerie Plame. Day 277 in the search for weapons of mass destruction. Day 764 in the valiant efforts of this administration to find out who sent anthrax to the two senators who could have stopped the Patriot Bill, Pat Leahy and Tom Daschle. And day 790 in the search for the whereabouts of George Bush's father's, of the son of George Bush's father's business partner, Osama bin Laden. Boy, this thing in the our program today, by the way, brought to you by Small Dog Electronics and the Organic Wine Company, smalldog.com, 1-800-511-MAX, and the Organic Wine Company, 1-888-ECO-WINE. And if you like this program, I encourage you to patronize our sponsors. Now, there is so much in the news today, but just an extraordinary revelation about this filibuster. I'm sure that you know about this because, well, you're going to find out in a minute why we know so much about this. As you know, let me get right to the punchline, and then I'll give you the background. This is remarkable. This from the Progress Report, Center for American Progress, with Senate conservatives complaining that only 98% of the Bush administration's judicial nominees have been confirmed, the 30-hour vigil over the four most conservative nominees continues on the Senate floor. Now, here's where it gets really interesting. Turns out that you and I, the taxpayers, are spending about $100,000 or more for this thing to happen. And guess who set it up? A memo written by a staffer for Senate Majority Leader Bill Frist. Remember Bill Frist? He's the guy whose family bought all those hospitals when they made it legal for hospitals to be for-profit. So they bought up a bunch of non-profit hospitals, turned them for-profit, started squeezing people, and made millions and millions of dollars, used his millions to run for the United States Senate. That guy, that Bill Frist. A memo from his staff says, and I quote, "It is important to double efforts to get your boss," so this is a memo that went out to all the other staffers of all the other Republican senators. "It is important to double efforts to get your boss to S-230 on time." This is, you know, where this is happening. "Fox News Channel is really excited about this marathon, and Brit Hume at 6 would love to open with all our 51 senators walking onto the floor. The producer wants to know that we will walk in at exactly 6:02 when the show starts, so they will be able to get it live to open Brit Hume's show. If not, can we give them an exact time for the walk-in start?" A made-for-TV appearance. This Bill Frist, also the guy who back when Bill Clinton was nominating judges, and the Republicans were leading a filibuster against one of them, Richard Paez, P-A-E-Z, I think it's Paez, a Clinton nominee. Bill Frist voted against invoking cloture, that is, back in 2000, when Bill Clinton had a nominee that he wanted to go through, Bill Frist said, no, let the filibuster go. But now suddenly he thinks it's anti-American. And a memo written by a staffer for multimillionaire Dr. Bill Frist, quote, "It is important to double efforts to get your boss to S-230 on time. Fox News Channel is really excited about this marathon, and Brit Hume at 6 would love to open with all our 51 senators walking onto the floor. The producer, oh, we've got to do this for Fox News. I mean, this is so important. Fox News, it's the official Republican channel. The producer wants to know we will walk in at exactly 6:02 when the show starts, so they get it live to open Brit Hume's show. If not, can we give them the exact time for the walk-in start?" mind-boggling. Now, what's even more mind-boggling is what's behind this. Because what is going on, folks, is a full press assault on democracy. And I don't mean that to sound, you know, wild-eyed or exaggerated. I know there are those who would do such, and certainly there's a lot of hysteria and panic running around with regard to a lot of things. This administration's destruction of civil rights and privacy rights and on and on. But no, the agenda here is very straightforward. It's the agenda, and you know, with the Federalist Society and the this whole thing, it is, if you can't tell the truth to the American people about the fact that the conservative agenda is at its core an agenda to replace American democracy with feudalism, rule by the rich, through the form of the very largest of the multinational corporations. And those of you who have listened to this program for some time know that I am not opposed to corporations. I've started many of them in my life. I run one right now. I think the corporate form is a fine thing. But there is a point where a corporation can become so large and so powerful that it becomes toxic to democracy itself. And our founders recognized that. It's why Thomas Jefferson, when the Bill of Rights was being drafted, proposed that there should be an amendment to, quote, bar monopolies in commerce, end quote. Thomas Jefferson wanted a constitutional amendment written into the Bill of Rights that said that corporations must do only one thing. You want a company that's going to run a railroad? Fine, let them run a railroad. You want a company that's going to build matchbooks? Fine, have a company that builds matchbooks. But one company can't own another company. You can't have what he called monopolies. What they were afraid of was a repeat of the East India Company. The British East India, the abuses of the British East India Company on North America were what led to the revolution of 1776. I mean, go back and read the history. It's all right there. In fact, I laid it out in a chapter in my book, Unequal Protection, that is online. You can read it for free. Just go to tomhartmann.com and go down to where it says Unequal Protection. It's got a list of my books, and click on that. There's a whole website for the book, and there's several chapters online. And read the chapter about the Boston Tea Party and what the colonists were saying. And they were very clear that they did not ever want there to be another situation where a corporation got so large, or a series of corporations got so large, that they could effectively seize control of the governmental process. And that's what we have now. Now, I'm not opposed to corporations. I'm not opposed to business. I think that business is one of the things, particularly small and medium-sized businesses, are the things that have built America and made America great. But we have a handful of companies, probably fewer than 1,000, maybe fewer than a few hundred in this nation, who are using their power and wealth inappropriately to devastate democracy. And they have in their pockets people like Bill Frist, the front man for the health insurance companies and the pharmaceutical companies. And the Republican Party has completely surrendered to the dark side of the force, and many in the Democratic Party have as well. Zell Miller being an obvious example, but there's no shortage of others. And so these guys, they get it that if they simply lay out their agenda, people won't vote for it, so they're going to do it by the back door. They're going to do it by getting their judges appointed and changing our laws that way. And when I tell you what these people that are being filibustered against have said, you're going to be amazed.
Uncommon Sense from the Radical Middle. This is Tom Hartman on the IE America Radio Network. Stay tuned. We will be right back.
Ugh, I've had it with this cold.
So try DayQuil. It'll help take care of your cold symptoms so you can get your energy back.
You think?
Oh, honey, you'll feel so good you can spend the day puttering in the garage.
The garage.
Clearing out lots of room for my car.
DayQuil. The non-drowsy, stuffy head, sore throat, coughing, aching fever help get back your energy. Medicine. Use as directed. And now it lasts 50% longer.
My name is Rachel, and in 3 months, I dropped 41 pounds and 4 pant sizes.
My name is Linda. I went from 211 to 170 pounds in 13 weeks.
My name's Jen. I lost 51 pounds and 13 inches off my waist.
My name's Rose, and I lost 36 pounds on ultralipoline and dropped 5 sizes. Last night, I ate a chocolate cheesecake, and I felt no guilt.
I'm Dr. Sue Parker. I help people support healthy weight and cholesterol levels with ultralipoline.
I'm Catherine. And I was really skeptical until I lost 14 pounds without any heavy exercise. My cholesterol's lower. My doctor says I'm much healthier. I've got a flatter stomach, leaner thighs. And look, I mean, I'm walking down the beach without a towel around my waist.
Call now for your risk-free trial of ultralipoline at 1-800-865-8449. It's guaranteed. Call 1-800-865-8449. Lose 2 dress or pant sizes in just weeks. Call 1-800-865-8449. Call now 1-800-865-8449.
If you think people are more important than corporations, you need to see The Progressive Populist. Twice a month, we feature columnists such as Jim Hightower, Molly Ivins, and other plutocrat pluckers from around the country. We'll send you a free sample copy if you'll call us toll-free 1-800-205-7067 or see our website at populist.com. That's 1-800-205-7067 or populist.com or The Progressive Populist, the newspaper for Main Street USA.
Hey, what is it?
I realize I love you, but as long as you're with Jessica, there can never be anything between us.
Cass, there's no need to cry. Besides, I've got really great news.
You're leaving Jessica?
No. I just saved a load of money on my car insurance by switching to Geico. I saved. I thought that meant something to you.
See what you could save. Call 1-800-947-AUTO. Geico. 15 minutes could save you 15% on car insurance.
My fellow Americans, this is Laura Pickles Bush. I understand that some of our otherwise upstanding citizens have been listening to that Mike Malloy person pollute this great nation's airwaves for 3 hours every night at 9 p.m. Eastern Time. Surely you can find a more productive use of your evening hours, like organizing neighborhood watch parties to search for the terrorists who are certain to be lurking in your playgrounds and possibly in your victory garden. Or you could spend the 3 hours simply standing in your yard, saluting the flag on your house, apartment, or trailer, or whatever you little people live in. I'm told some chronic Malloy listeners have found it helpful to repeatedly snap a little rubber band against the soft flesh of their wrists every night at 9 p.m. Eastern Time when they feel the unnatural and un-American temptation to turn on the Mike Malloy Show. I'm certain in time you'll find the method that works best for you and your family. This is Laura Pickles Bush saying, when it comes to the Mike Malloy Show, just say no.
Animal Talk, Sunday nights, taking your calls, talking to celebrities like Raven Simone from The Cosby Show and the Dr. Dolittle movies. Do you have any pets of your own?
I do. I have 2 chinchillas and I have a big Briard.
Do you train your dog?
I don't. I just give him love and take him out. So he better love me because I have to wake up at 4 o'clock in the morning.
So here you are, Therese Dolittle, talks to the animals, and you don't even train your own dog. Nothing but love.
Nothing but love. All the need is love.
Animal Talk on the IE America Radio Network.
This is the Tom Hartman Program on the IE America Radio Network.
Something good comes along. Birds in a blue moon. Everything's not going wrong. Well, you get weary, feeling on the same old gong. Once in a
Welcome back. You're in the Democracy Zone with Tom Hartman on the IE America Radio Network. Okay, so we've got this situation, this extraordinary situation, where multimillionaire Senator Bill Frist, who made his money, he had a successful practice as a heart surgeon, but his big money, his family money, came from this odious practice, which the cons have foisted upon us over the last 30 years. I remember when I was a kid, hospitals had to be nonprofit. Insurance companies that provided health care had to be nonprofit. And you could get by. You didn't have to panic that you were going to get sick. I mean, it was so anyhow. The cons got in there and started the feudalization of America, that is changing us from a democratic nation that has a middle class foundation to a Dickensian world where labor is cheap, and that is the ultimate mantra. Everything boils down to cheap labor. And Bill Frist squeezing money out of these hospitals, these formerly nonprofit hospitals that his family bought up and turned for-profit, using his millions to run for the Senate, and now in an unholy alliance with Fox News. Fox News Channel is really excited about this marathon, this trying to break the filibuster, and Brit Hume at 6 would love to open with all our 51 senators walking out onto the floor. The producer wants to know if we will walk in at exactly 6:02 when the show starts so they can get it live to open Brit Hume's show. Oh, isn't that incredible? Isn't that wonderful? Yes, Brit Hume needs the ratings. Fox News, of course, running at a loss for years, propped up by Rupert Murdoch, to promote this agenda. So, who is it that these guys are so passionate about? That they're saying, hey, even though we blocked Clinton's judicial nominees, did you know that this year 68 judges have been confirmed in the Senate? More than Bill Clinton had confirmed by Republicans in 7 of the 8 years that he was president? I mean, first of all, just the plain old hypocrisy of this is mind-boggling. But let's look at these folks. I mean, there were literally dozens of Clinton nominees that were held up in the last 6 years of the Clinton administration. Literally dozens. Consider, for example, Judge Charles Pickering Jr. Bush is actually thinking of doing what's called a recess appointment. When the Congress goes on recess, like soon they will break for Thanksgiving, this is written into the Constitution so that the president can deal with emergencies happening when Congress isn't around to do their mandated jobs. He can do what's called a recess appointment, which is basically he can just say, okay, cool, you're the judge now. And then you have to wait, and there's a cycle that you have to wait for before the Congress can go back in and say, well, do we really want this guy or not? And I frankly don't remember what the cycle is, whether it's a year or whether it's the next election or what. I can track that down. It's in the Constitution. Maybe I'll look for it during the break. But anyhow, a recess appointment is possible. This is one of the guys that they are filibustering against. He has said the one vote principle in America is obtrusive. What is the one vote principle? It means that if you're white, you get a vote. If you're black, you get a vote. If you're male, you get a vote. If you're female, you get a vote. He's not quite sure he's in favor of that. I got to tell you about Judge Pickering and a cross burning on the lawn of an interracial couple. This is the guy that Bill Frist, one of these, I'll tell you right after the break. Hang on, this is the Tom Hartman Program. We'll be right back.
What does corporate power have to do with disarmament? How does working for racial justice affect trade agreements? And what do they all have to do with the Cuban blockade? Having trouble making a connection? It's our specialty. The Women's International League for Peace and Freedom, for 88 years, connecting the issues for democracy and social justice. Why don't you connect with us? WILPF.org or call 215-563-7110.
This is the Tom Hartman Program on the IE America Radio Network.
International action to phase out an ozone-eating chemical is showing signs of success. I'm Richard Hoops for Earthwatch Radio. A chemical that has caused problems in the Earth's protective ozone layer started to fade away during the past 5 years. The chemical is bromine, and the first report on its decline was published last August in a scientific journal. The decline of ozone-eating compounds is always good news. Ozone in the stratosphere protects us against harmful ultraviolet radiation from the sun. The ozone layer was depleted by some chemicals that were once commonly used, but an international treaty is phasing out the production and use of those compounds. The most common ones were CFCs, and they were widely used in air conditioners. The problem with them had to do with the chlorine that's part of their chemical structure. The compounds that include bromine were never used as widely as CFCs, but when it comes to destroying ozone, bromine is 50 times more destructive than chlorine. That means any decline in bromine is significant. Steve Monska is a research chemist with the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration, and he helped write the bromine report. Monska says the phase-out of bromine compounds started in the late 1990s, a few years after similar restrictions were imposed on CFCs. He says both actions have worked.
Just to be able to say, based on our measurements, that bromine's no longer going up, and to be able to say that the behavior of people has changed enough to allow this to happen, we now see bromine going down, is important. These results mean that there's less bromine and chlorine now entering the stratosphere, and it's been that way for a number of years.
The biggest drop in bromine is due to restrictions on a gas called methyl bromide. It's used to fumigate some food products and farmland. Most of those uses will be phased out in 3 years. Earthwatch Radio is a service of the Sea Grant Program and the Gaylord Nelson Institute at the University of Wisconsin.
Animal Talk, not your father's radio show about animals.
Welcome to Lifestyles of the Wet and Stinky. We're looking at fishy fat cats and wealthy crustaceans. This is Bloodsucking Leech here, sending you algae-covered wishes and caviar-laying dreams.
Animal Talk, Sunday nights on the IE America Radio Network.
All right, boys, come on.
Greetings, everybody. This is Ramsey Pollard, Jr., the host of IE America's Sunday afternoon travel show, Ramblin' with Ramsey, on air 5 to 7 p.m. Eastern Time. Almost every Sunday, I travel to some location to offer you the opportunity of not only receiving wonderful printed material about the location, but to win a prize, maybe a couple of nights in a hotel or a resort or T-shirts or fudge. Oh, yes, there's always a lot of fudge. Come on, tune us in on your radio or go to IEAmericaRadio.com. I'll be there.
The best of the rest of the news. You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Sun is shining, the weather is sweet. Make you want to move your dancing feet to the rescue. Here I am.
Welcome back. It's Tom Hartman exposing the con and conservative day after day, coast to coast, noon to 3 Eastern time, 9 to noon Pacific time, and everything in between. We are on terrestrial radio stations literally from coast to coast, also broadcasting on the Sirius satellite, Stream 145, the Sirius satellite radio system. And also on several internet radio stations, live365.com, ieamericaradio.com, and my favorite, also a station that has some great music, radiopower.org. And there are archives of our program, a full 3-week archive of our program, if you miss a show and you want to listen to it, or if you're listening in off time zone or something, at whiterosesociety.org. You can find all of those things by simply going to tomhartman.com, where you can also get a link to our chat room, where right now there's a fascinating discussion going on. Florida, the Ice Age, Charles Pickering, One of the, it is a great bunch of people, a truly fascinating group of people who show up in our chat room, many of them every day. Every day there's always new people coming by. Sometimes we get some rather eccentric right-wingers who come in and try to have a discussion. Well, we welcome all. All are welcome. And there's the message board. You can also link to the message board off TomHartmann.com, where you'll find about 25,000 messages and some extraordinarily rational and intelligent conversation there as well. Anyhow, Charles Pickering, this is just amazing. President Bush, I'm just going to give this to you straight. This is from today's progress report. I just got a note from somebody saying, where is this stuff? The Center for American Progress publishes this thing called the Progress Report, which is great. We look at this. We look at BuzzFlash. We look at opednews.com. We look at commondreams.org. We read the New York Times. I get the Wall Street Journal every day. There, you get a broad brush of the news out there. And you can, fill in the blanks, connect the dots. But this particular one is the Progress Report from the Center for American Progress, done by David Sirota. Great organization and a good guy. In fact, he was on our program a couple weeks ago. Okay, here it is, straight through. And I want to get to talking about Iraq in this hour. Hopefully we'll have the time. And if you want to call, feel free. Our number is 1-800-TALK-YES. And by the way, at the beginning of the next hour, we're going to have on Thomas Cahill for a short time. He's the author of the Gift of the Jews and How the Irish Saved Civilization. He has a new book out about why the Greeks matter, called The Sailing the Wine Dark Sea, The History of Democracy. And we're going to talk with him a little bit at the top of the next hour, just so you know what's up. Anyhow, here's the story. President Bush is considering circumventing the Senate and appointing Judge Charles Pickering Jr. to the Fifth Circuit during the upcoming recess. Already, Judge Pickering is the first judicial nominee in the history of the entire United States who has been rejected by one Congress and renominated by the President to the same position. His nomination is already considered and rejected by the Senate Judiciary Committee in March of 2002. Why? Judge Pickering has criticized the one-person, one-vote principle as, quote, obtrusive, end quote, and something that legislatures reluctantly, quote, must live with, end quote. The principle, one of the most important guarantees of equality in our Constitution, has been found by the Supreme Court to be guaranteed by the 14th Amendment. The 14th Amendment, you will recall, says, I'm doing this from memory, but it's pretty close, all persons born or naturalized in the United States are citizens thereof, and no person shall be denied equal protection under the law. Judge Pickering apparently doesn't agree. Judge Pickering has routinely dismissed racial... the 14th Amendment, by the way, was passed right after the Civil War. Along with the 13th and 15th Amendments, these three were what freed the slaves and took slavery out of our Constitution. Judge Pickering has routinely dismissed racial discrimination cases, claiming, quote, people covered by such laws spontaneously react that discrimination caused any adverse action against them, end quote. Do you get this? He's saying that anybody who is harmed by racial discrimination is spontaneously reacting that discrimination caused any adverse action against them. How dare they acknowledge that there is still racism in America and that it causes problems for some people. As a law student, Judge Pickering wrote a law review article urging the Mississippi legislature to amend the state's somebody's going to have to call and tell me how to pronounce miscegenation law, MISCEGENATION. You know, the law that used to make it illegal for black people and white people to marry each other. I'm sure you have a word too. There's two or three words that I just cannot get my mouth around. Anyway, He wrote a law review article urging the Mississippi legislature to amend the state's law against blacks and whites being married to make it enforceable. Although Pickering Today dismisses the article as an academic exercise, the Mississippi legislature actually amended the statute the next year in accordance with Pickering's advice. You get this? Mississippi, back when this guy was a law student, had a law that said that black people and white people can't marry. It's illegal. It may well have even said they can't have sex together, because very often these laws said that as well. They can't have relations. They can't hold hands in public. I don't know exactly how the Mississippi law was written, but it's somewhere in that spectrum. This law was in place, and it had been struck down. It had been ruled null and void on the basis of something. Perhaps Bobby Kennedy's activities. I suspect this may have been before that. And so Judge Pickering, as a law student, writes a paper saying, well, here's how you can amend the law so you can make it enforceable. We'll stop this nasty activity. And the Mississippi legislature does it! As a federal judge, as a federal district court judge, Pickering has been reversed 15 times by the Fifth Circuit for, quote, violating well-settled principles of law, end quote. For example, in 1995, Judge Pickering violated Rule 3.4.A, of the Code of Conduct for U.S. Judges by directly contacting a Justice Department prosecutor. Now, get it. A judge in a case directly contacting a prosecutor in a case. This is like bribing a jury. I mean, this is that level of stuff. By directly contacting a Justice Department prosecutor in an ultimately successful attempt to reduce the charges against a defendant accused of burning a cross on the lawn of an interracial couple. And the Democrats wonder why the racist vote in the South goes to the Republicans. Well, we just can't figure it out. And when Howard Dean says, you know, we need to even reach out to those racists, maybe we can change their minds down the road. Everybody, ultimately, has the potential to grow and learn and change. And they jump down his throat. But look at this. I mean, this. And so here we've got this thing going on. For Fox News, this Majority Leader Bill Frist, our multimillionaire, squeezing your dollars and mine out of hospitals. And it's important to double efforts to get your boss to S-Sick 230 on time. Fox News Channel's really excited about this marathon, and Brit Hume at 6 would love to open with all our 51 senators walking onto the floor. The producer wants to open. Oh, wants to know, we will walk in at exactly 6:02 when the show starts so they can get it live to open Brit Hume's show. Or if not, can we give them an exact time for the walk-in start? Yes, Fox News is now choreographing the United States Senate through multimillionaire corporate shill Bill Frist. And I have to tell you, one of the things that I have always objected to about much of political talk radio, on the right or the left, is a pervasive sense of nasty complaining. And doing this dance now, it is so easy to get right to the edge of it, to read something like this, to learn the facts of who these extremist judges are that this administration is pushing through, that Bill Clinton's attempts to get his judges were thwarted in ways much more aggressively and much more successfully than the Democrats have done so far. The demagoguery on the part of the Republicans, you know, to expose and then, the, you know, doing the dance with faux news. That it's easy to, I suppose, come across like, I'm just angry about it. I have to tell you, I am really not angry about this. I am saddened by it. This is a tragedy. American democracy, we have this extraordinary gift that for over 200 years in this country and other countries around the world, there are now 80 democracies in the world of the 191 countries in the United Nations, that people have fought and died for, that the Greeks struggled with, brought into being. It suffered two revolutions, two revolts, the revolt of the 400 and the revolt of the 30 or 40, and then recovered and only to be crushed by Alexander the Great. That tribal people and indigenous people around the world have brought together and made work this extraordinary gift, this sacred thing called democracy. That a government would not be the ruler of the people, but would be ruled by the people. Do you get it? I mean, what an extraordinary thing we have here. And how these folks are willing, these so-called conservatives, and I have to say so-called, because Barry Goldwater, I do not believe, would be doing this. I don't think that Dwight Eisenhower would spit on the ground and walk away from these people. These are not conservatives. These are neo-feudalists. They want to take us back to the days of Queen Victoria and George III, of rule by the rich, where the rights are held by the government and the people live in fear that they may lose their jobs, that they may lose their health, that they may live and then die in poverty. So the labor is cheaper and the rich can become richer. And to do this, they're on a full-bore campaign to destroy our labor unions, which, believe me, you have to understand this. Organized labor is one of the few and probably one of the most effective, certainly one of the most effective, and one of the few things that is standing between you and me, between American workers and slavery. Organized labor is what brought us the middle class. We did not have a middle class. The world had not seen a middle class until we combined democracy with organized labor. If you're going to have the principle that corporations can organize, if Bill Frist can organize a bunch of for-profit hospitals and trade associations and lobbyists to advance his agenda to squeeze cash out of the hospital business, then employees, labor, must be able to organize as well to balance that. I mean, it's a simple thing. Democracy, the beauty, the majesty, the extraordinary thing about democracy is that it is a system of checks and balances. And the cons that are in charge right now, that have seized, by deception and duplicity, have taken the presidency of the United States and now the House and the Senate, and are trying to now seize control of our courts, in my opinion, have utter disregard for democracy and want to turn us back to a Darwinian dog-eat-dog world. Is that the kind of world we want to live in and we want our children to live in? This is Tom Hartman on the IE America Radio Network. We'll be right back.
To create a real democracy in this country, we need to sit down and talk with other people. Democracy begins with conversation. But how do we begin the conversation? The Women's International League for Peace and Freedom has a 10-week study guide called Challenge Corporate Power, Assert the People's Rights, to help you get the conversation started in your community. It's free on the web at WILPF.org or call 215-563-7110.
They are delicious. Connoisseurs love them. They're imported from France. They're certified eco-friendly. And they're reasonably priced. What am I talking about? Eco Wines. One of the best-kept secrets in America. Eco Wines from the south of France. Brought to you since 1980 by my company, the Organic Wine Company. My name is Véronique. I select these earth-friendly wines personally. They are made with organic grapes. They burst with life and flavor. But don't take my word for it. Call us to get a free sampler. Yes, you heard me right, a free sampler. Two full-size bottles delivered to your doorstep for a $10 shipping cost only. Our number? Easy to remember. 1-888-ECO-WINE. Our site? Easy to find. EcoWine.com. See, if you're going to eat, eat organic. If you're going to drink, drink wisely. Drink organic. Our future depends on it. Remember our number? 1-888-ECO-WINE. And that is ECOWINE.
I guess I better let the dog in.
Like the small dog that rules the house, Small Dog Electronics is the small computer company that really rules when it comes to customer service. Small Dog Electronics is your authorized Apple reseller in Waitsfield, Vermont. Sure, you can buy your computer out of a catalog, but how do you know you're really getting what you want or what you need? At Small Dog, they don't work on commission. Their only motivation is making sure you're a happy customer. Put your business on the leading edge with the world's fastest computer, the new Macintosh G5. You'll finish the job ahead of the pack, and automatic security updates lock out viruses. That's speed and dependability that will keep you focused on your customers instead of sitting on hold with tech support.
I guess you want to get on the couch, huh?
Like the small dog who everybody makes room for, Small Dog Electronics is big on customer service. Small Dog Electronics. Check them out on the web at smalldog.com or at their showroom on Route 100 in Waitsfield.
No way. You're not getting on the bed.
Thieves in high places. They've stolen our country, and it's time to take it back. The explosive bestseller from Jim Hightower. From King George W. to his friends at Enron, they've stolen everything. Our government, our money, and our American way of life. Hightower knows we can do better, and he's back with a new book that will make you laugh, make you mad, and make you want to take action. Thieves in High Places, a ray of hope in these dark days, and a roadmap back to real democracy. Available at bookstores everywhere and on the web at jimhightower.com. Buy Thieves in High Places today and help take your country back.
This is Mike Malloy with the IE America Radio Network. Want to know more about our talk shows and personalities but don't know where to look? Do you want to find out what guests are scheduled or what topics we'll be discussing on our programs? Would you like to participate in live chat or vote in interactive polls? All this and more is available at the IE America Radio website. Bookmark it. Stop surfing and get active. Visit www.ieamericaradio.com today.
Animal Talk. Not your father's radio program, take 48.
Tune in to Animal Talk this Sunday, Sunday, Sunday,
Sunday, Sunday, Sunday, Sunday,
for Animal Celebrity Boxing.
Boxing kicks butt.
Lightweight bout featuring fearless Felix the Cat.
Yeah, what a cat.
And that dog on ice, Tanya Harding.
Yeah, that dog will fight anyone for a block.
Animal Talk, Sunday nights on IE America Radio Network.
Sunday, Sunday, Sunday.
The Tom Hartman Show.
Bill in Hoffman Estates, Illinois, posting on our message board.
The doorbell rang, and I answered the door just as I finished posting how fed up I am with Bush. What a surprise. The guy standing in front of my door was very Republican look about him. His first words to me were, "Hi, I am your Republican precinct captain." Boy, has this guy got the wrong address, I said to myself. But not before I made it known to him that I consider Bush a menace to America. He started squirming and glancing around the front of my house. Our junkie responds. He says, I remember when the only people we had to worry about meeting on our doorsteps were Jehovah Witness crusaders. Now we have right-wingers. That's really scary. How to scare off door-to-door Republican visitors. And Klaus adds, well, answering the door naked can have the desired effect.
For Christ's sake, will you cover yourself?
The Tom Hartman Show, Monday through Friday, noon to 3 p.m. Eastern Standard Time on IE America Radio Network.
Bringing you uncommon sense, you're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Truth and common sense in broadcasting. This is the Tom Hartman Program. We're brought to you today by Small Dog Electronics and the Organic Wine Company. 1-800-TALK-YES is our phone number, 1-800-825-5937. And Shannon in Augusta, Georgia is on the line. Hey, Shannon, welcome to the Tom Hartman Program.
Hey, thanks, Tom, for taking my call. I just wanted to comment on what you were talking about with the labor unions being our only defense against becoming slaves against the new feudalist. Yeah. I seem to recall in high school taking medieval history classes and talking about how the feudalists at the time and how they were basically brought down
by the guilds,
the medieval equivalent of labor unions, the guilds.
That's right. The Masons were the first and the oldest. They were the guys who built the cathedrals, you know, the stonemasons. But yeah, it was the guilds that confronted feudalism. And you're absolutely right.
Well, we have a great advantage then. We already have labor unions, and the feudalists are trying to come back. They had to build those guilds from scratch, from what I understand.
Yeah, and it took hundreds of years.
So I was just reading this Da Vinci Code, the book, the Da Vinci Code by Dan Brown. It's a novel.
Yeah, I've heard a lot. I've heard a lot about that.
Fascinating stuff. But yeah, they're talking about Masons and all kinds of secret societies and spooky stuff like that. But I was just thinking about that when you mentioned labor unions, and I kind of made that connection. I didn't even think about it until you started talking about that.
Yeah, I mean, it's people think that, and Shannon, thank you. Thanks for bringing that up and raising that point, because it's an important one. People believe, there's a pervasive belief in our society that wages are a function of supply and demand. That if there's more economic activity, there's more jobs, then wages go up. If there's less economic activity, there are fewer jobs, then wages go down. And there is some truth to that. You may see McDonald's having to start paying, you know, $7 an hour instead of $6.80 an hour at your local, you know, whatever it may be. But the real variable that determines wages in the United States is not supply and demand, it's power. It has to do with power, the relationship between labor and management. Anyhow, this is the Tom Hartman Radio Program, talk radio for the rest of us.
From those ads in Tiananmen Square. It's coming from the field that this ain't exactly real, or it's real but it ain't exactly there. From the war against disorder, from the sirens night and day, from the fires of the...
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman Program on the IE America Radio Network. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.
Copyright 2003.
You've got your green alligators and long-necked geese, humpty-back camels and some chimpanzees, some cats and rats and elephants, but sure as you're born, don't you forget that unicorn.
Sunday nights, please listen to our show, because if you don't, Mark will not stop singing. Animal Talk, Sunday nights, on the IE America Radio Network.
Thank you.
Mike Malloy program. You know, the reason I turned this man off...
Why?
...is because he sounds like an 8-year-old.
Me?
Name calling.
I'm not an 8-year-old. I'm not.
You should get somebody who at least has some intelligence.
No, don't fire me. No. I got kids in college.
The Mike Malloy Show, weekdays from 9 p.m. till midnight, Eastern Time, on IE America Radio Network.
This is the IE America Radio Network News Break, your significant news source.
This is Don Waller in New York. The White House yesterday drew up emergency plans to accelerate the transfer of power in Iraq after being shown a devastating CIA report warning that the guerrilla war was in danger of escalating out of U.S. control. The report, an appraisal of situation commissioned by the CIA director and written by the CIA station chief in Baghdad, said that the insurgency was gaining ground among the population and already numbers in the tens of thousands. One military intelligence assessment now estimates the insurgent strength at 50,000. An intelligence source in Washington familiar with the CIA report described it as a bleak assessment that the resistance is broad, strong, and getting stronger. National Guard soldiers fighting in Iraq and Afghanistan are also battling with their own government over long delays and widespread errors in their paychecks, according to congressional auditors. The GAO says in a study to be released on Thursday that some activated Army National Guard soldiers saw delays of up to 3 months in their pay, while others were overpaid an average of $48,000 and told later they had to pay it back. Responding to the study, the Defense Department vowed to correct the problems and conduct a broader review to improve the systems involved. A suicide bomber blew up a truck packed with explosives at an Italian parliamentary base Wednesday, killing at least 26 people. The United States struck at the Iraqi insurgency hours later, destroying a warehouse in Baghdad and chasing attackers who were seen firing mortars. The Nasiriyah attack was the deadliest against an American ally since the occupation began and appeared to send a message that international groups are not safe anywhere in Iraq. It came on the same day the chief U.S. administrator for Iraq went to the White House to put forth proposals on transferring more authority to the Iraqis. More IE American Network news after this.
We were just driving to school. Yeah, the music was loud. And we were all talking. I thought I had everything under control. Until I hit that kid in the crosswalk.
Please, look for pedestrians. Stop for them. Think of the impact you could make. A message from the Federal Highway Administration.
In another positive sign that things are improving in Iraq, Iraqi police officers will be able to enjoy luxurious wedding rides in the metallic pink Rolls-Royce of ousted President Saddam Hussein's flamboyant son, Uday, an official said Tuesday. Uday was last seen in the pink limousine in public on October 15, 2002, when he turned out to vote in Baghdad during a referendum for his dad, Saddam Hussein. Riders are told to make out the checks to the mustachioed man who drives the limousine. For IE America Network News, this is Don Waller in New York.
This has been the IE America Radio Network News Break, produced by TakeBackTheMedia.com. For more information, visit IEAmericaRadio.com or TakeBackTheMedia.com.
This is incredible. People everywhere are discovering they have 24 hours to live. With one pill a day, that's 24 hours to live without frequent heartburn. Yes, it's possible with Prilosec OTC. One pill a day can relieve heartburn for 24 hours. Holy moly, you could have zero heartburn. So, folks, get out there, because without frequent heartburn, you could have 24 hours to live it up.
One pill a day, 24 hours, zero heartburn. It's possible with Prilosec OTC. Use as directed for 14 days for frequent heartburn.
Like a bad tamale, Halliburton, Inc. keeps repeating on us. This massive military contractor has a long history of weaseling into war deals that reap huge profits for the company's owners and executives. During the Vietnam years, its Brown & Root subsidiary pumped money into Lyndon Johnson's campaign coffers and then drew billions of dollars from us taxpayers in profiteering funds from that war. Then, with Dick Cheney as its CEO in the 1990s, it grew even fatter on military deals, including getting Iraqi contracts to repair Saddam Hussein's war-torn oil industry. Now, Cheney has moved up to vice president, Saddam has been declared the great Satan, our troops are in an ongoing war in Iraq, but there's Halliburton, still weaseling, still profiteering. Cheney's old company, which puts more than $150,000 a year into his bank account, was first in line to get taxpayer funds from the Bush-Cheney regime for rebuilding Iraq. Of all the companies in the world, the Cheney-connected Halliburton got the non-bid contract to import gasoline into Iraq. So far, it has been paid $700 million for this chore, with the money coming not only from U.S. taxpayers, but also from a United Nations fund meant to provide humanitarian aid in Iraq. Lest you think Halliburton is humanitarian, it has been caught gouging everyone involved. The company is charging $1.59 a gallon for the gasoline that it delivers from countries close around Iraq. Well, says Halliburton, it takes a lot to distribute fuel in a war environment. We might swallow that, except that an Iraqi oil agency is able to get gasoline from the same sources, deliver it in the same war environment, and charge only 98 cents a gallon. This is Jim Hightower saying, hey, Halliburton, in war, when the bugle blows, you're supposed to charge, not overcharge.
What do you think I like about commuting with nature as much as I do? Being on the tractor as much time as I do, or spending time with the animals.
Spitting diesel into the ozone layer? Yeah, you're at one with nature.
You have meddled with the primal forces of nature, and you will atone.
On the IE America Radio Network.
Providing you with informative and entertaining programs, this is the IE America Radio Network.
He's the man who uncovers corporate lies, exposes political corruption, and has a clear vision of what America could become. Here's Tom Hartman.
Welcome back. This is Tom Hartman on the IE America Radio Network, broadcasting live coast to coast, border to border. We have today, this hour, Thomas Cahill, the author of the best-selling books, How the Irish Saved Civilization, The Gifts of the Jews, and The Desire of the Everlasting Hills, comprising volumes 1, 2, and 3, respectively, of the prospective 7-volume The Hinges of History series. A lifelong scholar, Thomas Cahill has studied with some of America's most distinguished literary and biblical scholars. Mr. Cahill, welcome to the Tom Hartman program.
Thanks for inviting me.
I'm very pleased you could be here. You note that the end of empire may not necessarily be a bad thing for its mother country. For example, you noted that Britain became a better nation after its imperial phase. Do you see parallels in today's world?
It's a funny thing. Mr. Rumsfeld, when he took over the Pentagon, one of his first acts was to commission a study of how ancient empires maintained their hegemony. I think he would have been far better off and created a far more meaningful set of thoughts for himself if he had commissioned a study on how they lost eventually everything they had gained. There are frightening parallels between what happened to the Athenian Empire and what we're going through right now. The Athenians were the people who really brought rationality to war. They didn't go into war just because they had some mystical idea about themselves. They really attacked it from a very rational point of view, and they gave us the kind of warfare that, for instance, Colin Powell engaged in the first Gulf War, when he insisted that we only go in if we had overwhelming military might against the enemy, because that's just the way the Greeks conducted warfare. But by the time they got involved, by the time the Athenians got involved in the Peloponnesian War, they really had forgotten what it was that had made them such good warriors to begin with. They thought that they could win just because they were Athenians.
Now, if I may interrupt you, where was this in time in relation to the period that we refer to as the Athenian democracy?
Well, the Athenian Empire really began to crumble after the death of Pericles, and this would be late 5th, early 4th century B.C. Right. And what happened, unfortunately, Athens went to war against Sparta thinking that it didn't need allies. And an incredible thing happened. Athens lost to Sparta, which no one would have predicted beforehand.
And this was when they were still considered a democracy, when there was still the
kind of... Oh, yeah, they were a great democracy. And, they were. Yeah. I mean, they were the world's first democracy. It was a partial democracy. Women, of course, were not included. Slaves were not included. They had an awful lot of them. But that's the first time that power is shared among all the classes of society, leaving out women and slaves. But it was still an enormous step forward from anything that had ever existed before. Athens was a wonderful ancient city. I think if you hadn't been a slave, you would have enjoyed living there.
Yeah. So it was hubris that brought them down, you think?
Yeah. Yeah, they thought that they could win just because they were who they were. And that doesn't really do it, you know? You have to have a better plan than that one.
Yeah, we see where just a couple of days ago, one of the generals, I don't have the story right in front of me here, but one of the generals, in response to what's going on in Iraq, said, well, we're just going to have to strike them harder. A verbatim quote from Trent Lott. He said, quote, if we have to, we just mow the whole place down and see what happens. You're dealing with insane suicide bombers who are killing our people, and we need to be very aggressive in taking them out. Mow the whole place down?
Gee, isn't that very reminiscent of destroying the village in order to save it in the Vietnam
right.
War? It's almost a direct parallel. And we saw how far that got us.
Yeah, and how successful it was ultimately. So the Greeks, the Roman, the British empires, all of these empires ultimately crumbled.
Well, they crumbled for different reasons. You know, that was what happened to the Athenians. The Romans actually should give us even greater pause. Everyone thinks of, you know, Rome fell. You know the way people refer to Rome? They say, oh, well, the fall of the Roman Empire when they see people partying too much. It wasn't partying that brought down the Roman Empire. More than, there were two things. First of all, it was unequal taxation. In order to fund the army and in order to fund their far-reaching campaigns, the emperors taxed not the rich, who were his friends, but the poor and the lower rungs of the middle class. The rich only pretended to pay taxes in ancient Rome. And as the burden of tax became ever greater on the lower rungs of society, the society fell apart.
So what brought down the Roman Empire was tax cuts for the rich.
Exactly. That's exactly what happened. The other thing that really did them in, that was the internal problem. The external problem was that they didn't know how to absorb immigrants. You know, we think about the barbarian. We're always told about the barbarian invasions. The barbarians were not invaders; they were immigrants who wanted in to the Roman Empire. Mm. They wanted to be part of its economy. They in general didn't destroy much of anything. It's just that the Romans didn't know how to absorb them, and there was no way of building a wall that was high enough and wide enough to keep the immigrants out. The border guards never, because of the taxation problem, the border guards could never be funded adequately, and so people kept coming in until finally there was no you couldn't tell the Romans from the barbarians. But the real problem was that the Romans in their snootiness could not bring themselves to absorb barbarians, which is what they should have done. If they had come up with a rational plan to absorb barbarians, they would have lasted forever. So I think those are two things that are very close to ours. And of course, what really did in the British is that they couldn't continue to pay for their empire. They succeeded in making a few people very that empire succeeded in making a few people very rich, who then of course became gradually were titled by the monarchy, the richer they became. But in the end, British society could not economically sustain the empire. All these things, I think, the hubris of the Athenians, their lack of allies, their thinking that they could go it alone, the unequal taxation, the faulty idea of what should, of keeping immigrants out, and finally economic overextension. All these things are things that we should look at seriously.
Yes. We're speaking with Thomas Cahill, author of Sailing the Wine Dark Sea, Why the Greeks Matter, the third in a series of remarkable books that he has written, How the Irish Saved Civilization, The Gifts of the Jews. I'm sorry, this is the fourth, The Desire of the Everlasting Hills. And now, I understand, just a point of minutiae here, one of the things that I seem to recall was, you know, back when I was studying this stuff, was that one of the things that led to the collapse of the Roman Empire was that voting only took place in the city of Rome, and as the empire got more and more far-flung, it became less and less a participatory republic. And was that related to how this, tax cuts for the rich came about, that people weren't participating, or was that, am I in error in my understanding of that?
Well, I don't think that was certainly true, that, Rome, unlike Athens, was never a democracy. It was a republic, which was, I suppose you might call it a quasi-democracy. It had democratic aspects to it, but it was basically an oligarchy, and it always had been. It was an oligarchy of rich tribes. They were the people
who
controlled the economic and political setup. They weren't an empire to begin with. They were a republic. It was the Roman Republic, and the first emperor, Augustus, came from a very wealthy family. He was not, shall we say, the brightest bulb in that family by any means, but he turned out to have very good political instincts, and he was really made emperor not by a vote of the people, of course, but by
don't tell me it was the Supreme Court.
It was the Roman Senate, which functioned the way our Supreme Court functioned. I'm sorry, but that's what happened, and they basically capitulated.
Yeah,
and he was in, and once he was in, he was never out.
Yeah, Thomas Cahill, author of Sailing the Wine Dark Sea, Why the Greeks Matter, his new book. Mr. Cahill, in Greek society, you point out in your book that the economic gap was a lot narrower than perhaps today.
It didn't amount to much of anything, you know.
Yeah, the rich were basically 10 times more wealthy than the is it plebeians or plebeians?
Well, that was a Roman term. They didn't call them plebeians, but the lowest economic category of voter was probably five times, or at the most 10 times poorer than the most affluent, which doesn't amount to an awful lot when you think of the terms today, where a municipal bus driver makes infinitely less money than the CEO of a large corporation. The difference between those two salaries is really mind-boggling.
And have those kinds of differentials appeared in the course of in the history of previous civilizations and empires, and what have the consequences of
I them? Doubt very much that there has very often been a society in which the differences were as great as they are in our society.
What about Victorian England?
Well, that certainly would be a good instance, a terrible maldistribution of wealth also. But even there, the people at the top were not making what the people at Halliburton and until recently Enron and such places are making. Wants and needs were far less at the time. As I say of the of the Greeks, you know that. Pretty much all forms of dress were kind of the same. You know, there wasn't, you know, you couldn't, as far as conspicuous consumption went, you couldn't, a toga was a toga and a cloak was a cloak. You know, there wasn't an awful lot. There wasn't such a big difference in clothes, and housing was modest, even for very rich people.
There was more of an aesthetic of it.
There was. There was a lovely aesthetic. I mean, they had a, as is very often the case in Southern Europe, they had a wonderful sense of public space.
Yeah.
And and people lived outdoors because, well, especially in Greece, the light is more plentiful in Greece than in any other European country.
Yes. If you can hold that thought, we're talking with Thomas Cahill, author of Sailing the Wine Dark Sea. This is Tom Hartman on the IE America Radio Network. Stay tuned. We'll be right back. If you'd like to call, if you have a question for Mr. Cahill, our number is 1-800-TALK-YES. Stay tuned.
Think people are more important than corporations, you need to see The Progressive Populist. Twice a month we feature columnists such as Jim Hightower, Molly Ivins, and other plutocrat pluckers from around the country. We'll send you a free sample copy if you'll call us toll-free 1-800-205-7067 or see our website at populist.com. That's 1-800-205-7067 or populist.com or The Progressive Populist, the newspaper for Main Street USA.
This is Eric Muller reporting from Chopper 5.
Cut!
News happens fast. Can I afford to let a cold slow me down? Not up here. When I'm achy, with a stuffy nose and a sore throat, I take Advil Cold and Sinus. It's got the power of Advil to handle tough pain, plus a hard-working decongestant. That's why they call it Advil Cold and Sinus.
Quick, over to the highway!
I call it fast relief for a reporter on the fly.
For tough colds, advance to Advil Cold and Sinus. Use as directed.
Did you know that grapes are one of the most heavily sprayed of all agricultural products? Most people don't. But that is why it's so very important to drink wines that are made with certified organic grapes. And that is exactly what we are inviting you to do today. Taste our wines. We select them personally. They come from small properties in the south of France. They are delicious. Connoisseurs love them. And they are earth-friendly. But judge for yourself. Call us at 1-888-ECO-WINE. We'll answer all your questions. And we will send you a free sampler. Yes, a free sampler. Two full-size bottles delivered to your doorstep for a $10 shipping cost only. My name is Véronique. I founded the Organic Wine Company in 1980 for people just like you. People who love wine and want to do well by our earth. I look forward to talking with you. Call 1-888-ECO-WINE, and that is ECOWINE.
We'll be back with more music, but first a look at weather. Here's meteorologist Tom Sparks.
Thanks, Chad. There's a front moving in from the south, which is going to mix with warm air, giving us the distinct possibility for showers over the next few days. In fact, some of them are going to be big soakers, let me tell you. However, if you're planning any outdoor activities for the weekend, I have good news.
So it's going to be clear?
No, I just saved a bunch of money on car insurance by switching to Geico.
See how much you could save. Visit Geico.com. Geico, 15 minutes online could save you 15% on car insurance.
Show. According to Abbas, immediately after Bush promised to speak with Sharon about the siege on Arafat, Bush said, quote, God told me to strike at Al-Qaeda, and I struck them. And then God instructed me to strike at Saddam, which I did. When God specifically whispers in someone's ear, I want you to go kill those people, and they go ahead and kill somebody, what do we do with those folks? We arrest them, they are jailed, in some instances, executed. We immediately identify them as crazy. You know, Ashcroft is going to say,
wait a second, George. God has been talking to me. God told me. Not you. God told me. These people are crazy.
They're coming to take me away, ha-ha. They're coming to take me away, ho-ho, hee-hee, ha-ha.
The Mike Malloy Show, Monday through Friday from 9 p.m. till midnight Eastern Standard Time on IE America Radio Network.
So they're coming to take me away.
For the latest in cutting-edge technology, computers, entertainment, and much more, tune into tomorrow here on the IE America Radio Network every Sunday from 2 to 5 p.m. Eastern Time. Hi, this is Dave Graveline. Into Tomorrow is the interactive radio program with experts featuring new technology and the latest consumer electronics. Check out our internet site anytime at graveline.com and join us live this Sunday at 2 p.m. Eastern, 11 a.m. Pacific on the IE America Radio Network.
This is the Tom Hartman Program on the IE America Radio Network.
Let us pause in life's pleasures and count its many tears while we all sup sorrow with the poor. There's a song that will linger forever in our ears. Oh, hard times come again no more.
Welcome back. This is Tom Hartman, Uncommon Sense from the Radical Middle on the IE America Radio Network. We're talking with Thomas Cahill, author of Sailing the Wine Dark Sea. What a beautiful title.
You know, you guys are great. I've never heard your show before. I'm just blown away by it.
Well, thank you. I'm glad you like it. You can find us at IEAmericaRadio.com is the website for the network. TomHartman.com will get you to my homepage, which points to archives of the show and all that sort of thing. We're on stations from coast to coast. We're on the Sirius satellite radio system, which is nationwide. There's Stream 145, what's called Sirius Left. And there's three or four internet radio stations also that run the show. So we get.
Well, I'm going to track you down. I live in New York City, and I've never heard you before.
Great. We're negotiating right now with a station in New York. We're not on in Manhattan at the moment, but
I'll pray that you are.
Bless you. Thank you.
Yeah, you too.
Thank you. Okay, we're talking with Thomas Cahill, author of Sailing the Wine Dark Sea, Why the Greeks Matter. Mr. Cahill, in your book on page 247, you compared John F. Kennedy to Pericles. I thought that was interesting. I wonder if there is a particular historical figure that comes to mind when you think of George W. Bush.
Yeah, there is. There's a guy named Pisistratus. Really tried to destroy the Athenian democracy. At one point, he was very good at staging events, or at least his people were good at staging events for him. Mm. And at one point, in a particularly chaotic moment in Athenian history, he arrived coming down the streets of Athens in a golden chariot, accompanied by an extremely tall and very beautiful woman dressed in golden armor, and whom he claimed was the goddess Athena, come to restore order to her city. And simple people knelt in the streets and raised their arms to heaven and were very, very thankful. And of course, he was just a kind of Greek mafioso who knew how to take advantage of people's simplicity and used religion empty pieties to get them on his side.
Yeah.
And that was his name again was Pisistratus.
Pisistratus. And what came of him?
Well, he was finally thrown out, or his team was thrown out. And they returned, they restored the democracy as it had been. He's just one of the, he's one of the anti-democrats, because democracy was in Athens an experiment. And when it began there, it was a unique experiment. Though it soon traveled to about 150 other places.
Yeah.
But it because of its nature, because it was an experiment, it was delicate and vulnerable and fragile in certain ways, and as is always the case, popular or populist, but empty human beings can do great damage to such a structure.
Yes, this was before the revolt of the 400 and the revolt of the 30, or as I'm sure I'm missing my numbers up here. Toward the end of the Greek democracy.
No, it was considerably before that. Pisistratus occurred after Solon, whom I compare to.
Oh, okay.
To FDR,
mm-hmm.
He actually came before Pericles, and whom I compare to John F. Kennedy. And Pericles gave, I think, probably the best political speech of all time, which I quote in full in the book because it's such a magnificent speech.
Well, I'd love to get a sample of it. And I have one more question for you, if you can hang on the line here for just another 5 or 10 minutes with us. Great. We're talking with Thomas Cahill, the author of Sailing the Wine Dark Sea, Why the Greeks Matter. This is Tom Hartman on the IE America Radio Network. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
What does corporate power have to do with disarmament? How does working for racial justice affect trade agreements? And what do they all have to do with the Cuban blockade? Having trouble making a connection? It's our specialty. The Women's International League for Peace and Freedom, for 88 years, connecting the issues for democracy and social justice. Why don't you connect with us? WILPF.org or call 215-563-7110.
This is the Tom Hartman Program on the IE America Radio Network.
International action to phase out an ozone-eating chemical is showing signs of success. I'm Richard Hoops for Earthwatch Radio. A chemical that has caused problems in the Earth's protective ozone layer started to fade away during the past 5 years. The chemical is bromine, and the first report on its decline was published last August in a scientific journal. The decline of ozone-eating compounds is always good news. Ozone in the stratosphere protects us against harmful ultraviolet radiation from the sun. The ozone layer was depleted by some chemicals that were once commonly used, but an international treaty is phasing out the production and use of those compounds. The most common ones were CFCs, and they were widely used in air conditioners. The problem with them had to do with the chlorine that's part of their chemical structure. The compounds that include bromine were never used as widely as CFCs, but when it comes to destroying ozone, bromine is 50 times more destructive than chlorine. That means any decline in bromine is significant. Steve Monska is a research chemist with the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration, and he helped write the bromine report. Monska says the phase-out of bromine compounds started in the late 1990s, a few years after similar restrictions were imposed on CFCs. He says both actions have worked.
Just to be able to say, based on our measurements, that bromine's no longer going up, and to be able to say that the behavior of people has changed enough to allow this to happen, we now see bromine going down, is important. These results mean that there's less bromine and chlorine now entering the stratosphere, and it's been that way for a number of years.
The biggest drop in bromine is due to restrictions on a gas called methyl bromide. It's used to fumigate some food products and farmland. Most of those uses will be phased out in 3 years. Earthwatch Radio is a service of the Sea Grant Program and the Gaylord Nelson Institute at the University of Wisconsin.
My fellow Americans, this is Laura Picklesbush. It seems that some of our otherwise upstanding citizens are listening to the Mike Malloy Show at 9 p.m. Eastern Time every weeknight. Surely you can find a more patriotic and productive use of your evening hours. For example, organizing neighborhood watch parties to search for the terrorists who are certain to be lurking in your playgrounds and possibly hiding dangerous weapons of mass destruction in your victory gardens. This is Laura Picklesbush saying, when it comes to the Mike Malloy Show, just say no.
For the latest in cutting-edge technology, computers, entertainment, and much more, tune in to tomorrow here on the IE America Radio Network every Sunday from 2 to 5 p.m. Eastern Time. Hi, this is Dave Graveline. Into Tomorrow is the interactive radio program with experts featuring new technology and the latest consumer electronics. Check out our internet site anytime at graveline.com and join us live this Sunday at 2 p.m. Eastern, 11 a.m. Pacific on the IE America Radio Network.
The best of the rest of the news. You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Welcome back. This is Tom Hartman on the IE America Radio Network, defending America from the conservative weapons of mass deception. Today we're talking with Thomas Cahill, author of Sailing the Wine Dark Sea, Why the Greeks Matter. And Greece, the Athenian Greeks, of course, being the first experiment in democracy since Gilgamesh rose up and decided to create modern civilization, I suppose you could say. Correct me if I'm wrong. Yeah. The philosopher Georges Sorel said that a government can motivate and control the masses through the manipulation of what he called a national myth.
Yeah.
And you could say that the national myth is a modern variation of the Greek and Roman state religions, you know, and in more recent time, you've got the German Nazis and the Italian fascists and the Japanese imperialists, who all consciously use national myth to get fanatical religious support from the masses. Do you see the American right doing the same with its hyper-nationalism and cheap use of symbols and pledges and things?
Oh, yeah. I mean, they're really trying to make it into the black hats and the white hats. They think they're the white hats. They are really that nonsense that the supposed current president had got off when he was running for office. I'm a uniter, not a divider. He's sponsored one form of division after another. I mean, there really is a sneaky attempt to turn all dissenters into traitors.
Yeah. A few months ago, I was reading the debates of, is it Herodotus?
Herodotus? I don't know where you're going, but he was the father of history.
Yeah, I have to check my pronunciation because
you got it right.
The three debates, because I've read this stuff, but it's been so many years since I was in school. Anyhow, and there was this long discussion of the kind of circular reasoning about democracy and the future of democracy, and Socrates always seemed very skeptical about it.
The philosophers in general were skeptical about democracy. They were elitists. I mean, Socrates and Plato in particular.
Yeah.
They're not my favorite Athenians, but they're very, very interesting. And, of course, they had an enormous effect on us in all sorts of ways that we aren't even aware of anymore. But there's definitely a high elitist strand running through those guys.
Yeah. There's been some fascinating recent research published in Nature and several other science journals about democracy in animals. You know, we've always assumed that animal kingdoms were autocratic, but that the alpha male, for example, or the alpha female with wolves has an ability to have a sexual preference, but actually doesn't lead the group. That when all the wildebeest, when a certain threshold, 51% of them are pointing in a particular direction randomly, that's when the flock or the herd moves in that particular direction. And there's a growing number of people who are suggesting that perhaps democracy is actually genetically, in a Darwinian sense even, in a survival of the fittest, the most appropriate way for humans to organize themselves. This is not something that, as you say, Socrates necessarily agreed with. But do you think that, number one, do you think that that's possibly true? And were there Greeks who outspokenly promoted something similar to that? And do you see that in today's world?
Well, I think it's pretty undeniable at this point that many primitive societies they weren't democratic in our sense that they didn't necessarily count heads and take votes, but there was a sort of consensus that emerged after discussion. So they weren't so primitive after all. We just called them that. But these were small groups of people. It's when there's a big grain supply, which is the initial form of long-term economy, that somebody decides to seize that grain supply and become the king. But in early societies, hunter-gatherer societies, they seem to have been consensus-driven.
Yeah, and still are.
Yeah, that's right, the ones that still exist.
Yeah,
like an extended family than anything else, you know, where there may be a patriarch, sort of, but that doesn't mean he gets to call all the shots.
Yeah, and these are the ancient roots of democracy. We're talking with Thomas Cahill, author of Sailing the Wine Dark Sea. And Mr. Cahill, we have a caller. Holly in Santa Fe has called 1-800-TALK-YES, 1-800-825-5937 with a question for you. Holly, welcome to the Tom Hartman program.
Good morning, Tom.
Hey, good morning, Holly.
Good morning, Holly. Are you my Holly?
I am your Holly, and I'm calling for all of us in Santa Fe. I just want to say that Tom Cahill was the guest speaker at the Santa Fe Jewish and Christian Dialogue in 2001, and he has a very tight group of dear friends here who hold him in our hearts. So it's so exciting to hear you on the Tom Hartman program this morning. We listen every day. I just had breakfast with Ben Larzelier, And I tried to get through to them to call him and let him know that you were online.
Well, it's wonderful to hear from you.
And I do, in fact, have a question.
All right.
Okay.
And at the closing session of the Jewish and Christian Dialogue, we closed with the Havdalah at St. Francis Cathedral, where Tom spoke. It was deeply moving. And at that event, he read an article that was the kind of a Christmas story that he'd been asked to write by someone who then rejected it for publication because they didn't think it was appropriate. And it was so good that we're all wondering if it has been or will be published somewhere.
No, I'm thinking of putting together a collection of my rejected essays.
Wonderful idea.
Of which that's one, but I assure you it's not the only one.
You put it on the internet, you know.
Yeah, it can be difficult to right now to get certain things published that op-ed editors and various folk like that decide are intemperate.
Yeah, yeah. Thank you for the call, Holly, and thanks for listening to us on KTRC there in Santa Fe. And Thomas Cahill, I want to thank you again for being on our program today, for hanging out with us this long, and putting up with what no doubt are probably some of my naive questions. But
it was a great delight. Thank you for inviting me.
Thank you. Your book is a masterpiece. All of your books have been extraordinary. Sailing the Wine Dark Sea, Why the Greeks Matter, by Thomas Cahill. Thank you again.
Thank you.
This is Tom Hartman on the IE America Radio Network, and back to surprise world. Let's step here out of the ancient world for a moment into the modern world. And isn't it fascinating how these cycles go by and go around? And just this morning I was reading. What did I do with it? I don't have it right where I can grab it. But anyhow, I was reading James Madison, where he was talking about how democracies cannot survive in a state of perpetual war, how perpetual war would always wear down or destroy democracy. And you know, George Orwell wrote about this and all this. But here we are again. Here we are with a president who has now come out and said that we are going to be in the midst of a perpetual war. This is the kind of struggle, the kind of disaster that Thomas Cahill has documented so well in the history of the Greeks. And now we look at the situation in Iraq as we're reaching out and creating empire. Typically, for there to be, I mean, typically there's a somewhere between a 1 in 10 and 1 in 100 ratio that has to exist between insurgent activists in a population and supporters. In other words, when the American Revolution happened, for every person in the American Revolution who stepped forward with a gun and was willing to take a shot at the British soldiers, there had to be somewhere between 10 and 100 other people who were willing to support that person, hide them, conceal them, not reveal them, not give them in, apply collective group pressure, emotional pressure, psychological pressure, peer pressure, that's the word, on their peers to allow them to operate. Without that, 100 to 1 is the generally accepted number. In some societies, it could be as small as 10 to 1, and some it may, you know, certainly a very successful insurgent movement, you might be 1,000 to 1. But without that 100 to 1, more or less, ratio, you just can't have an insurgency. It can't happen. And this is what, this week, the CIA said to George Bush. And, you know, it really is looking to me like Paul Bremer was the one who brought this thing forward, who said, hey, you know, we've got to wake up. There's something going on here. I mean, here we have General John Abizaid saying he's going to use stern measures. We have the capabilities and equipment for a get-tough campaign. And, you know, dropping 500-pound bombs in Fallujah. And what is happening is that more and more of the Iraqi people are beginning to see, you know, they're seeing, it's not a secret. They're seeing that we are selling off their nation, that we are pumping out their oil. Now they say, well, we're rebuilding their nation, yes. A fine thing. We tore it apart. They know we were responsible for that decade of sanctions. I doubt that most Americans realize that 15 years ago, Iraq was one of the most progressive and secular societies in the Middle East. Now, certainly it was a dictatorship run by a madman. But women could work. They didn't have to wear the veil. If you weren't a political dissident, you didn't have to worry about violence, by and large. There was a thriving economy. Baghdad was a major metropolitan city and a very successful one. And then through these years and years of sanctions, during which thousands of children were dying of diseases associated with the sanctions, we declared that the chlorine that would be used to purify water could also be used to make poison gas, so they couldn't have it, so the water became contaminated, things like this. And, you know, they just don't think of us the way we think of us. So how is the administration failing to win the hearts and minds not only of Iraq and Afghanistan, but America itself? See, if we're going to have a democracy in America that's going to end up in a more positive and favorable way than Greek democracy, which ultimately fell at the hands of Alexander the Great, if we're going to have democracy in America that doesn't dissolve into empire like the Romans did, we have to have an educated and informed populace, and we must have a wise, intelligent, and informed debate on real issues. To see a president just ignore a million people in the streets of America saying, no, please don't do it. To have a president who creates so-called free speech zones where he herds protesters away from camera view. To have a deal where one of the world's richest men creates a television network, hires a former Republican operative, Roger Ailes, from the Reagan era, and says, you know, let's create a so-called news network. And then they cut a deal with Bill Frist, the multimillionaire hospital magnate, head of the United States Senate, to time a theatrical event of, you know, trying to break a filibuster in the Senate so that it can start, so that they can be walking in at 6:02 just as the Brit Hume show starts. I mean, are we witnessing the end of democracy in America? And so we have to go back. We have to look at what we're doing here in Iraq, and just consider some of these things. There's a series of pictures. You can see them on our website. If you go to tomhartman.com and go to the message board, and on the message board go to the radio show section, and Joe McPherson, one of our producers, has posted them there, I believe. And these are pictures that everybody in the world, except in the United States, has seen. Al Jazeera has plastered the planet with these things. And CENTCOM in Florida actually warned Al Jazeera not to publish them. And they're pictures of American soldiers tying up, you know, with the plastic handcuffs and frisking, searching women and small children in Iraq and Afghanistan in ways that look terribly humiliating. The Council on American Islamic Relations, CAIR, is conducting an investigation into these acts. And day after day after day throughout the Middle East, these things are being shown. And I mean, it's not that our soldiers are bad people. You get some 19-year-old who's joined. You know, hey, it's a good job, it's good pay, it's adventure, it's see the world. Maybe you can get some college benefits. By the way, did you see where as soon as Jessica Lynch stopped singing the tune of the administration, or start, it came out and said, hey, wait a minute, I was used. Her brother now is being shipped off to Iraq. He's in the Army. Just happened. Anyhow, I want to tell you what's going on in Iraq. There's some fascinating things here. Stay tuned. This is Tom Hartman on the IE America Radio Network, the true people's radio. We'll be right back.
To create a real democracy in this country, we need to sit down and talk with other people. Democracy begins with conversation, but how do we begin the conversation? The Women's International League for Peace and Freedom has a 10-week study guide called Challenge Corporate Power, Assert the People's Rights, to help you get the conversation started in your community. It's free on the web at WILPF.org or call 215-563-7110.
My name is Rachel, and in 3 months, I dropped 41 pounds and 4 pant sizes.
My name is Linda. I went from 211 to 170 pounds in 13 weeks.
My name's Jen. I lost 51 pounds and 13 inches off my waist.
My name's Rose, and I lost 36 pounds on ultralipoline and dropped 5 sizes. Last night, I ate a chocolate cheesecake, and I felt no guilt.
I'm Dr. Sue Parker. I help people support healthy weight and cholesterol levels with ultralipoline.
I'm Catherine. And I was really skeptical until I lost 14 pounds without any heavy exercise. My cholesterol's lower. My doctor says I'm much healthier. I've got a flatter stomach, leaner thighs. And look, I mean, I'm walking down the beach without a towel around my waist.
Call now for your risk-free trial of ultralipoline at 1-800-865-8449. It's guaranteed. Call 1-800-865-8449. Lose 2 dress or pant sizes in just weeks. Call 1-800-865-8449. Call now 1-800-865-8449.
Hey, Sneezy, go to sleep.
I can't.
You could if you take NyQuil. It'll help your symptoms. So you'll sleep great. You know, like you do when we cuddle on the couch with a warm fleece blanket, a cozy fire, and a chick flick.
Now that's my kind of sleep.
Mm-hmm.
Give me that.
NyQuil, the nighttime sniffling, sneezing, coughing, aching, stuffy head, fever, best sleep you ever got with a cold medicine. Use as directed. Now try new and improved Liquicaps.
I guess I better let the dog in.
Like the small dog that rules the house, Small Dog Electronics is the small computer company that really rules when it comes to customer service. Small Dog Electronics is your authorized Apple reseller in Waitsfield, Vermont. Sure, you can buy your computer out of a catalog, but how do you know you're really getting what you want or what you need? At Small Dog, they don't work on commission. Their only motivation is making sure you're a happy customer. Put your business on the leading edge with the world's fastest computer, the new Macintosh G5. You'll finish the job ahead of the...
Yeah, it would.
If they did it to Clinton with as little as they had to
oh
go on.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, why not?
The Mike Malloy Show, Monday through Friday from 9 p.m. till midnight Eastern Standard Time on IE America Radio Network.
Bringing you uncommon sense, you're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Class stainless steel microphone high up in the green mountains of the People's Republic of Vermont. This is Tom Hartman on the IE America Radio Network. Welcome back. 1-800-TALK. Yes, our number, 1-800-825-5937. And Brian in Manchester, New Hampshire, one of the states that may help define who's going to be the next president of the United States, is on the line. Hey, Brian, welcome to the Tom Hartman Program.
Hi, yes, I wanted to talk to Mr. Cahill, but I know I missed him. I wanted to recommend another book by Michael Parenti called The Assassination of Julius Caesar. It just came out.
Hmm.
Apparently,
have you read it?
Yes, apparently Julius Caesar in history, he wanted to give much to the common man. He was almost like in that more primitive stage of human civilization, he was more like an FDR. He wanted to give universal education and health care to the average Roman citizen, to the average working class crafters, citizens of Rome. He wanted to teach them rhetoric, the children of the poor and the working class, which was unthinkable to the elitist like Cicero. And I still believe he was involved with the conspirators that murdered Julius Caesar.
But Cicero was on the Ides of March.
Yes. I think we're coming up upon the anniversary of a similar kind of murder that happened November 22nd, 1963, for different historical reasons, but there are some similarities. Yeah. And I think that it's Michael Parente, he's a great writer anyways, and I think Mr. Cahill's book is that's something I'm going to pick up. But I really believe, yes, the ancient Greeks and the Romans, they are our teachers, but we don't want to learn from history. This is America especially, we get by with saying we're a young nation or we're always optimistic nation, and like Ronald Reagan would like us to think of the city on a hill. But that's not the true story of we have many failings.
Part of our story, Brian. I mean, we have to acknowledge that we have high ideals and there are many positive aspects to America as well.
Yes.
That's let us never forget that. But yeah, I agree. If you don't diagnose an illness, you can't treat it. And we have some problems right now. Brian, thanks for the call. I appreciate it. I will look for that book. 1-800-TALK, yes, our number. And when we come back, I want to share with you some thoughts of Herbert Hoover on war propaganda. I think you'll find it fascinating. This is Tom Hartman on the IE America Radio Network. News without conflicts of global corporate interests.
Been listening to the Tom Hartman program on the IE America Radio Network. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.
Copyright 2003.
Tia Carrera is on the front in Playboy. I think what you have done is give a little more license to people who have a few more years on them.
Probably a few more years on them.
Well,
a few more years on them.
No, I'm talking about now.
Like the tread on a tire.
Yeah, never mind. I can't make it better.
Here's what I think. You couldn't possibly be any dumber. You go and do something like this.
On the IE America Radio Network.
For the latest in cutting-edge technology, computers, entertainment, and much more, tune into tomorrow here on the IE America Radio Network every Sunday from 2 to 5 p.m. Eastern Time. Hi, this is Dave Graveline. Into Tomorrow is the interactive radio program with experts featuring new technology and the latest consumer electronics. Check out our internet site anytime at graveline.com and join us live this Sunday at 2 p.m. Eastern, 11 a.m. Pacific on the IE America Radio Network.
This is the IE America Radio Network News Break, your significant news source.
This is Don Waller in New York. The White House yesterday drew up emergency plans to accelerate the transfer of power in Iraq after being shown a devastating CIA report warning that the guerrilla war was in danger of escalating out of U.S. control. The report, an appraisal of situation commissioned by the CIA director and written by the CIA station chief in Baghdad, said that the insurgency was gaining ground among the population and already numbers in the tens of thousands. One military intelligence assessment now estimates the insurgent strength at 50,000. An intelligence source in Washington familiar with the CIA report described it as a bleak assessment that the resistance is broad, strong, and getting stronger. With casualties mounting in Iraq, jumpy U.S. soldiers are becoming more aggressive in their treatment of journalists covering the conflict. Media people have been detained, news equipment has been confiscated, and some journalists have suffered verbal and physical abuse while trying to report on events. Although the number of incidents involving soldiers and journalists is difficult to gauge, anecdotal evidence suggests it has risen sharply in the past 2 months. The president of the Associated Press Managing Editors sent a protest letter to the Pentagon on Wednesday, urging officials to immediately take steps to end such confrontations. National Guard soldiers fighting in Iraq and Afghanistan are also battling with their own government over long delays and widespread errors in their paychecks, according to congressional auditors. The GAO says in a study to be released on Thursday that some activated Army National Guard soldiers saw delays of up to 3 months in their pay, while others were overpaid an average of $48,000 and told later they had to pay it back. Responding to the study, the Defense Department vowed to correct the problems and conduct a broader review to improve the systems involved. More IE American Network news after this.
We were just driving to school. Yeah, the music was loud. And we were all talking. I thought I had everything under control. Until I hit that kid in the crosswalk.
Please, look for pedestrians. Stop for them. Think of the impact you could make. A message from the Federal Highway Administration.
A South Carolina man had an uninvited house guest this week, a 3-foot alligator. Michael Hunt found the alligator in his garage Monday afternoon. He quickly hit the button to close the garage door after the gator growled at him, rushed into his house, and dialed 911. Orangeburg County Animal Control officers removed the reptile, and it was relocated in one of the county swamps. It's not clear how or why the juvenile reptile made its way into the garage. Hunt said he was most concerned about the safety of children who could have stumbled across the gator. This is Don Waller in New York.
This has been the IE America Radio Network News Break, produced by TakeBackTheMedia.com. For more information, visit IEAmericaRadio.com or TakeBackTheMedia.com.
This is Eric Muller reporting from Chopper 5.
Cut!
News happens fast. Can I afford to let a cold slow me down? Not up here. When I'm achy, with a stuffy nose and a sore throat, I take Advil Cold and Sinus. It's got the power of Advil to handle tough pain, plus a hard-working decongestant. That's why they call it Advil Cold and Sinus.
Quick, over to the highway.
I call it fast relief for a reporter on the fly.
For tough colds, advance to Advil Cold and Sinus. Use as directed.
Like a bad tamale, Halliburton, Inc. keeps repeating on us. This massive military contractor has a long history of weaseling into war deals that reap huge profits for the company's owners and executives. During the Vietnam years, its Brown & Root subsidiary pumped money into Lyndon Johnson's campaign coffers and then drew billions of dollars from us taxpayers in profiteering funds from that war. Then, with Dick Cheney as its CEO in the 1990s, it grew even fatter on military deals, including getting Iraqi contracts to repair Saddam Hussein's war-torn oil industry. Now, Cheney has moved up to vice president, Saddam has been declared the Great Satan, our troops are in an ongoing war in Iraq, but there's Halliburton, still weaseling, still profiteering. Cheney's old company, which puts more than $150,000 a year into his bank account, was first in line to get taxpayer funds from the Bush-Cheney regime for rebuilding Iraq. Of all the companies in the world, the Cheney-connected Halliburton got the non-bid contract to import gasoline into Iraq. So far, it has been paid $700 million for this chore, with the money coming not only from U.S. taxpayers, but also from a United Nations fund meant to provide humanitarian aid in Iraq. Lest you think Halliburton is humanitarian, it has been caught gouging everyone involved. The company is charging $1.59 a gallon for the gasoline that it delivers from countries close around Iraq. Well, says Halliburton, it takes a lot to distribute fuel in a war environment. We might swallow that, except that an Iraqi oil agency is able to get gasoline from the same sources, deliver it in the same war environment, and charge only 98 cents a gallon. This is Jim Hightower saying, hey, Halliburton, in war, when the bugle blows, you're supposed to charge, not overcharge.
see the look on Nancy's face.
What's she doing?
I asked her if she wanted a boogie, and she just gave me this condescending sneer.
Is it the condescending, I don't boogie?
How would I keep up with her?
Right.
Boogieing.
Boogie. Yeah. Doug, I've never seen you dance.
Kind of looks like a frog in a blender.
I could dance with you till the cows come home. On second thought, I'd rather dance with the cows when you come home.
On the IE America Radio Network.
Providing you with informative and entertaining programs, this is the IE America Radio Network.
Rapid and radical return to the old values that made America great, the values of democracy on which this country was founded. This is the Democracy Zone with Tom Hartman. To talk with Tom Hartman, call 1-800-TALK-YES. Here's Tom.
And welcome back, patriots, lovers of democracy, truth and justice, believers in the American way. This is Tom Hartman broadcasting live coast to coast on the IE America Radio Network. I present you with a former President of the United States, Herbert Hoover.
We're told that we must join in war or democracy will disappear from the earth.
Interesting. We're told that we must join.
We're told that we must join in war or democracy will disappear from the earth. That is a propaganda of the preparatory type.
Propaganda? Propaganda? What is Mr. Hoover, former President Herbert Hoover, talking about? He has some specific thoughts on this.
And here we can examine one of the methods of power politics, and that is propaganda. During the World War, propaganda was first developed into an actual weapon no less potent than the killing of men. When peoples and governments weigh the sacrifice of their sons, then truth and honesty and tolerance and justice are thrown to the winds if a lie will serve better. The Great War was the first time in history when all the powerful agencies of publicity and the manipulation of news were organized without moral restraint under the genius of skilled men. They were built up a skill and a technique in front of which every citizen was helpless to know the truth. And since that time, the radio has become an additional weapon.
Wow. And here we see it again. I prefer to think that we are the loyal opposition, not the weapon, but President Herbert Hoover on propaganda for war. American soldiers shoot Iraqi mayor. You know this guy. He bled to death. They shot him in the leg. The Iraqis are not happy. He was a mayor that we put into place, and we shot him. He got in a fight with an argument with one of the guards. He wanted to drive into the city council. He was following protocol, and apparently this guy didn't recognize him. And this is the point I made earlier, and I hope it wasn't misunderstood. I said you get these 19-year-old kids over there, and it's not that our soldiers are young and dumb and like that. It's that they're not trained for police work. Police work is a very specific, this is tough stuff. And, as I've said many times in this program, when our police officers and our teachers make the same kind of pay that senior executives and corporations do, then you're going to see some very positive changes happen in our culture. And police work is a very difficult, and it requires a high level of professionalism and a lot of good, competent training. And it's unfortunate that there aren't more people who rise to that level of competence among our police, but there are many. But when you join the Army, you don't learn to be, unless you're going to the MPs, which is, we don't have 130,000 MPs, you don't learn how to be a police officer. And so we've got these guys over there doing their best, but boy, is it causing problems. And this popular uprising looks like it may well bite us in the butt. And George Bush, it's not about, I suppose it would sound cynical to say it's not about the bodies coming home, that he has made it against the law for us to see, that we can no longer, news cameras are no longer allowed at Rheinstein or at Dover Air Force Base to see the incoming dead, and they are forbidden from the hospitals where the wounded are. It's not so much, in my opinion, that. I mean, you know, the casualties certainly are something that any person would not want to have happen, including George Bush, I'm sure. But I think the big issue here is that he's got, in 12 months, an election coming. It's going to be really hard for him to pull an October surprise out of the hat by way of war, which was, in my opinion, was probably his first plan, that in September, October, he planned to attack Syria, in September, October of 2004, and ride the popularity of that into the presidency in 2004. He has borrowed so many trillions of dollars from our children and our grandchildren and passed it out to people in America and to our large corporations now that that's starting to trickle down into the economy and is producing some results. Not a lot of jobs, but some apparent results. And I really think this is about electoral politics, and there's just a panic right now in the White House. This, of course, being the most poll-driven White House in the history of the United States. Karl Rove running polls every day. It's amazing. I don't know if you read the Vanity Fair article 6 months ago or so about Karl Rove and how they run the operation of the White House. Nothing happens. No statements are made to the press without their running polls on these things. Policies are poll driven. It's that they test words. What word is in the polls going to get people? Resolute. Which word is more powerful, resolute or fearless? Dynamic or strong? And they test these words until they figure out which adjectives to attach to the president and which ones sound worse. You know, failed or weak. Which word shall we attach to the Democrats? Did the polls show or the focus groups show that if you called Howard Dean angry or if you called him liberal, which was more effective as a way of causing people to think poorly of him? And the polls, of course, are showing they've got a problem. 1-800-TALK-YES, our number, 1-800-825-5937. If you'd like to weigh in on these or other issues of the day, I got a whole pile of news stuff here to share with you. Tim in Connecticut's on the line about money and politics. Boy, is that a mess, Tim. Hey, welcome to the Tom Hartman program.
Welcome, Tom. By the way, speaking of that situation, a lot of the Connecticut National Guard are some of the MPs that were sent over there, mm-hmm. and they simply don't have the equipment and the body armor that they were promised, and it's becoming quite an issue down here in Connecticut. People are saying, you know, with all these billions of dollars, can't we outfit our people in the kinds of body armor that is needed? And yeah. that people are just, you know, all the congressmen are running around promising that they're going to protect our National Guard people. It's become
almost comical. Yeah, but, you know, they don't get it, Tim. I mean, there's got to be enough money left over to give a profit to Halliburton. You've got, you know, and Bechtel Corporation. I mean, they're guaranteed their profits. You've got to pay them those profits. And if you don't pay them those profits, then you know, you're in violation of the contract. So, hey, a couple of kids getting body armor, you know, Halliburton comes
they
first.
They can't even feed them well because, you know, Halliburton and Brown and Root and all those people who are supposed to feed them aren't doing that. So people are collecting foodstuffs to send to our people over there. And I just, you know, it makes me lose what hair I've got left on my head and just going, you know, we should be able to feed them, our own people.
This is coming back to bite the administration. What they're noticing now, and I've got a whole story on this here from military. The increasing disenchantment among military personnel and veterans with the Bush administration's handling of the American occupation in Iraq may create a liability for President Bush in his 2004 election bid, said journalists at a briefing Wednesday. They go on to say, importantly, if their votes go to Democrats, Bush could be in for a defeat. Wallace Wells point out that it would have taken less than 0.02% in the military vote for the Democrats to have prevailed in Florida in 2000. And with a shift of less than 5% of the veteran vote alone, Democrats would have secured the electoral votes in Arkansas, Nevada, and New Hampshire. Al Gore would have won. And those people in the military are not happy right now.
Oh, well, I agree, although I have to put that caveat, that was all politics before September 11th.
Yeah.
And I still don't think the Democrats... I actually called up to talk about this money situation. You know, people have been bouncing back and forth about whether this Soros situation on the emails is good or bad for democracy, giving these millions of dollars, and then Dean and probably Kerry also saying that they're going to completely go around the campaign finance reform, and I think essentially gut and kill campaign finance reform probably for several elections.
It was gutted and killed 4 years ago, Tim, or three years ago, Tim, by George W. Bush.
Sure, and
let's be realistic here.
Yeah, but you know, no one, of course, held anybody accountable for this kind of process. But it's the, you know, it is kind of the back door kind of way. You know, as much as you know, I think
the front door way would be to change the law. I mean, right now, what the law says is, if you're going to get matching funds, you can't spend more than $45 million, and you got an opponent who's already raised twice that, and it says he's going to raise $250 million. You know, you'd have to be nuts to say, okay, fine, I'll stay with the $45 million. Come on.
Nuts or use it as a tactic in and of itself. I mean, a lot of those kinds of
and lose.
Money that is being spent is on being on television ads, which more and more people are turning off left and right.
But this is America, Tim. You're not going to win political elections unless we go back to what we had prior to the 1980s, prior to the Reagan, and Bill Clinton too, the Telecommunications Act of '96. Reagan and Clinton basically handing the airwaves of America over to the big corporations, and then the big corporations saying to the politicians, oh, you want to talk to the people? Well, guess what, guys? It's going to cost you some bucks.
Well, I understand the cynicism of it. As someone who's advocated public finance reform, I mean, where is campaign finance reform going? I mean, people are almost essentially giving up their values in order to win this next election. And then
what I'm saying, Tim, is instead of criticizing, you know, Dean and these other guys and Kerry now for saying that they're not going to play the game because there's a $45 million cap, we should be criticizing the members of Congress for not going in and raising that $45 million cap up to whatever your opponent spends.
Well, that's an initial start, but aren't we also talking about the fact that, you know, it's kind of an escalating problem? Even if we raise that amount of money to these higher levels, we're still talking about, you know, campaigns costing way, way too much money, and it's almost an endless spiral.
We should have what they have in England, where if you're running for the House of Commons, you can't spend more than £100,000, period.
Well, that's a good start. Who are the candidates who are advocating the campaign finance reform? Who are the ones that are, you know, that are promising this stuff? I hear a lot of people saying, I need to do this and be as bad as the other guys. Don't see, you know, the promise, you know, that this is actually ever going to get fixed.
But the reality, Tim, is that it's the reality, Tim, and you and I both know this, is that it's never going to come from the top down. It's going to come from the bottom up. It's going to be when enough people like you and I get angry enough or upset enough, and our message gets to enough politicians that, hey, we think this system sucks. This thing is broken. This is not democracy. This is a kleptocracy. This is an autocracy. This is ruled by the rich, and only the rich have access to the media. And you guys, you are in the position to change it. And if you don't, we're gonna vote your butts out of there. Then change will happen.
But instead, I hear people saying, yeah, let's be just as bad as the other guys. We need to defeat them at all costs and that stuff. I don't hear the anger. I hear, yeah, let's go get them and stuff and defeat Bush. And believe me, I'm all for that. But you know, I don't see the bottom up.
I'm hearing both. But I think, you know, you raise a real issue, Tim, and it's one that we need to be talking about more. Thank you for the call. I appreciate it. This is Tom Hartman on the IE America Radio Network. Talk radio for the rest of us. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
Would you like to know what the future holds? Call the psychic phone line today and talk with a real live psychic. Our psychics are fully licensed and guaranteed to know what the future holds. Just listen.
Hello, psychic phone line, Matthew.
Tell me what the future holds.
Good news.
I'll be rich and successful?
No, I just saved a bunch of money on my car insurance by switching to Geico.
See what you could save. Call 1-800-947-AUTO. Geico. 15 minutes could save you 15% on car insurance.
Quick question. Ever had a cold that only lasted 4 hours? Anybody? Then why take a 4-hour cold medicine? Instead, take Aleve Cold and Sinus. One pill has the strength to give you 12 hours of relief. No stuffy nose, no throbbing head, all day. So what's it going to be? 12 hours of relief or symptoms that interrupt your day? Do I really need to ask?
Try non-drowsy Aleve Cold and Sinus. One pill, 12 hours of relief. Use as directed.
They are delicious. Connoisseurs love them. They're imported from France. They're certified eco-friendly. And they're reasonably priced. What am I talking about? Eco Wines. One of the best-kept secrets in America, Eco Wines from the south of France. Brought to you since 1980 by my company, the Organic Wine Company. My name is Véronique. I select these earth-friendly wines personally. They are made with organic grapes. They burst with life and flavor. But don't take my word for it. Call us to get a free sampler. Yes, you heard me right, a free sampler. Two full-size bottles delivered to your doorstep for a $10 shipping cost only. Our number? Easy to remember. 1-888-ECO-WINE. Our site? Easy to find. EcoWine.com. See, if you're going to eat, eat organic. If you're going to drink, drink wisely. Drink organic. Our future depends on it. Remember our number? 1-888-ECO-WINE. And that is ECOWINE.
Thieves in high places. They've stolen our country, and it's time to take it back. The explosive bestseller from Jim Hightower. From King George W. to his friends at Enron, they've stolen everything. Our government, our money, and our American way of life. Hightower knows we can do better, and he's back with a new book that will make you laugh, make you mad, and make you want to take action. Thieves in High Places, a ray of hope in these dark days, and a roadmap back to real democracy. Available at bookstores everywhere and on the web at jimhightower.com. Buy Thieves in High Places today and help take your country back.
If you're looking for the latest in cutting-edge technology and the products that everyone is talking about, tune into tomorrow right here on the IE America Radio Network every Sunday from 2 to 5 p.m. Eastern Time. That's 11 a.m. to 2 p.m. Pacific. Hi, this is Dave Graveline. Into Tomorrow is the highly interactive radio program with experts featuring the latest in consumer electronics, technology, computers, and the Internet. We cover all things cool, like digital photography and video, home theater and audio, home automation, gadgets and gizmos, the technology of making music, computer peripherals, HDTV, DVD, MP3s, car audio, navigation and security, and lots more. If it draws current, we talk about it. Let us bring you into tomorrow. Check out our website anytime at graveline.com and join us this Sunday at 2 p.m. Eastern, 11 a.m. Pacific, here on the IE America Radio Network.
The Mr. Rogers Parenting Book. Fred Rogers, a pleasure to have you here.
What I'm hearing you say is that you delight in creating community.
I do. I think thinking about things and working through problems and issues is an important tool.
I'm just thinking that the world could take some lessons from the Doug Steffen neighborhood.
Doug Steffen's Good Day.
On the IE America Radio Network.
This is the Tom Hartman Program on the IE America Radio Network.
He's a cowboy president, but he wears a black hat. In America, can't get away with that.
And welcome back. It's Tom Hartman on the IE America Radio Network. You're in the Democracy Zone. Here's, we got Phil in Florida on the line. Phil, before I bring you on, I want to play a little clip here and see if you can tell me which president this was a campaign ad for. What president would run, what person would run for president of the United States on the platform of being in favor of peace?
He has met Europe's leaders, has got them working with us. Elect the number one man for the number one job of our time.
Vote for peace. Who was it? Phil, welcome to the Tom Hartman Program.
I have no idea, but I sure wasn't Mr. Hannity.
Here's the end of it.
Vote for Eisenhower.
Amazing, huh?
Vote for Eisenhower.
That was his campaign slogan. Vote for peace, vote for Eisenhower.
Wow. Listen, you know, you brought up a couple of issues. You said, is this still a democracy? And then you said... and then we're talking about the issue of polling by the White House.
Yeah.
This is a White House, this is a government, that if the polling shows that he is definitely going to lose, they will say that they have inside information, that terrorists are planning to commit murders on polling day, and we are going to postpone this election until further notice.
You know, I don't think that
most of the Democrats, you know, most of the Democrats have been gelded. You know, so Gephardt will get up, you know, says, "Well, I don't think it's a good idea to do this."
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Who's gonna, you know what I mean? And most of the newsmen, Rather and all the rest of them, they're gonna, well, you know, I guess we, you know, who's going to object loudly?
Yeah. Well, Phil, let me, you know, if you want to dance on the edge of conspiracy theory, I think that perhaps you're not going deep enough. Just consider, I mean, instead of looking at the future, look at the past. Right after 9/11, they pulled out of their back pockets this 400 or 500 page law, the Patriot Act,
right,
that just, you know, suddenly appeared, and it ended up that there were, you know, two men who had the power to kill it, who were both inclined to do so, strongly inclined to do so, Tom Daschle and Jim Jeffer, not Jim Jeffer, the Pat Leahy. Mm-hmm. Pat Leahy was the head of the Senate Judiciary Committee that it had to go through. If he didn't let it out of committee, it never would have gotten passed. And Tom Daschle was the head of the Senate Democrats and could have killed it. And they were talking, you know, about, hey, you know, we're not sure that we're willing to give up our civil liberties just for this 9/11 thing. And all of a sudden, anthrax shows up in the offices of two members of the United States Senate. And
yeah.
Who was it? It was Leahy and it was Daschle. Now, I'm not I'm not such a conspiracy over the topper that I think that there's necessarily a cause effect relationship there. But on the other hand, you look at history and you say, well, maybe. So I think that if George Bush thought that he was going to go down the tubes in November of 2004, and I think he's starting to think that right now, that there are a lot of things that he could do that are a lot more subtle than calling off the elections. He, you know, declaring war on Syria is the one that I've been predicting.
I don't think he's got the manpower to do it anymore.
Right, right.
He can say the threat of terrorism, we are at a state of war, the threat of terrorism, I'm worried about the American public being murdered at the polls by terrorists. They've threatened to do this, and for the sake and safety of the American people, we're going to have to postpone the election indefinitely.
But if some guy can just, like, you know, magically make anthrax appear at the offices of a couple of senators, couldn't some guy maybe blow up a nuclear power plant someplace or a bridge or a
well, whatever.
You know,
but the point
something?
Is, he, you know, I would not put it past him to basically turn call off the election.
Yeah. Well, time will tell. Let's hope you're wrong, Phil. I really hope these guys, if they are losing, are willing to lose gracefully. This is the Tom Hartman radio program on the IE America Radio Network, the No Spoon Feeding Zone. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
What does corporate power have to do with disarmament? How does working for racial justice affect trade agreements, and what do they all have to do with the Cuban blockade? Having trouble making a connection? It's our specialty. The Women's International League for Peace and Freedom, for 88 years, connecting the issues for democracy and social justice. Why don't you connect with us? WILPF.org or call 215-563-7110.
This is the Tom Hartman Program on the IE America Radio Network.
International action to phase out an ozone-eating chemical is showing signs of success. I'm Richard Hoops for Earthwatch Radio. A chemical that has caused problems in the Earth's protective ozone layer started to fade away during the past 5 years. The chemical is bromine, and the first report on its decline was published last August in a scientific journal. The decline of ozone-eating compounds is always good news. Ozone in the stratosphere protects us against harmful ultraviolet radiation from the sun. The ozone layer was depleted by some chemicals that were once commonly used, but an international treaty is phasing out the production and use of those compounds. The most common ones were CFCs, and they were widely used in air conditioners. The problem with them had to do with the chlorine that's part of their chemical structure. The compounds that include bromine were never used as widely as CFCs, but when it comes to destroying ozone, bromine is 50 times more destructive than chlorine. That means any decline in bromine is significant. Steve Monska is a research chemist with the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration, and he helped write the bromine report. Monska says the phase-out of bromine compounds started in the late 1990s, a few years after similar restrictions were imposed on CFCs. He says both actions have worked.
Just to be able to say, based on our measurements, that bromine's no longer going up, and to be able to say that the behavior of people has changed enough to allow this to happen, we now see bromine going down, is important. These results mean that there's less bromine and chlorine now entering the stratosphere, and it's been that way for a number of years.
The biggest drop in bromine is due to restrictions on a gas called methyl bromide. It's used to fumigate some food products and farmland. Most of those uses will be phased out in 3 years. Earthwatch Radio is a service of the Sea Grant Program and the Gaylord Nelson Institute at the University of Wisconsin.
You know, Jamie, if people don't listen to animal talk, things with their animals won't go well.
Oh, they won't.
No, absolutely not. You see, because a dog will poop in the corner, and then a cat will end up peeing on a pillow. Then you'll have somebody who has an iguana that turns a little red. We don't want red iguanas. We don't want poopy in the corner. We don't want cat pee. If you don't listen to Animal Talk, you'll have crap everywhere.
Animal Talk, Sunday nights on the IE America Radio Network.
Do the Republicans or the Democrats have a clear vision for America that actually includes democracy, fairness, and justice? Do the Greens or the Progressives? How can we create a shared vision of the kind of future we want for our children? This is Tom Hartman, and I'll be exploring these and many other issues with guests from a wide variety of viewpoints, as well as taking your calls.
The Tom Hartman Show, 12 p.m. till 3 p.m. Eastern Standard Time on IE America Radio Network.
The best of the rest of the news. You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Sun is shining, the weather is sweet. Make you want to move your dancing feet to the rescue. Here I am. Won't you to know y'all? Can you understand?
And welcome back. Talk radio for the rest of us. This is Tom Hartman on the IE America Radio Network, and we are back here on the air. I wanted to just share a couple of clips with you. There have been times in America when idealism was the norm, not the exception. When the average American really and truly understood that we can all pull together and make things better. When our political leaders, many of our political leaders, held high ideals for us. And one of my heroes, one of my favorites, is Franklin Roosevelt. And I just wanted to share just a couple little short pieces with you from him before we get into these the news about these six different ways that the Department of Labor defines unemployment and how the administration's been playing with the numbers. But here, just some thoughts. Number one, here we are in Iraq, and a good buddy of George W. Bush's, one of his old friends and pioneers, a former business partner, has now set up a company to help American companies go over to Iraq and buy the assets of the nation for pennies on the dollar and build their fortunes. We are we euphemistically call privatizing Iraq. And you go back and you look at the Project for New American Century and other similar, you know, thinking on the part of the cons and the neocons, and the broad notion is, okay, America is consuming 25% of the planet's oil. We're maybe 6% of the planet's population, 5 or 6. But we're consuming 25% of the planet's oil. And about 40% of the oil that we consume, we have to import. And if, as George Bush Sr. said, the American lifestyle is not negotiable, rejecting Jimmy Carter's idea that we should start focusing on conservation and alternative energies, as Ronald Reagan did, his first official act of office being to remove from the roof of the White House the solar collectors that Jimmy Carter had put there. And soon thereafter, I mean within days and weeks thereafter, striking down, writing out of law through executive order or just simply reversing the laws, doing away with the tax credits and tax breaks that Jimmy Carter was offering to corporations that became more energy efficient, to individuals who insulated their homes. Why put out of business an entire solar industry and said, no, it's okay. We will, since the big oil companies helped bring Ronald Reagan to power, and he had to pay them back, and they, you know, I shouldn't just say Ronald Reagan, because probably by that time he was beginning to lose it a little, and Reagan Bush. You'll remember George Bush Sr. used to own Zapata Oil Company before his son got in the oil business. And so we had 12 years of Bush Sr. Well, we had, you know, 8 years under Reagan. And yeah, 12 years and then 4 years of Junior. The reign of the oil companies. And so we said, okay, well, if we're going to have the American lifestyle be non-negotiable, if we're not going to allow the price of gasoline to rise, if we're not going to have COLA standards, fleet standards raised on cars, if we're not going to encourage American auto manufacturers with tax breaks or you know, other, so many different means that you can affect the direction of industry that government can and routinely does day by day. You know, agricultural subsidies and steel, on and on it goes. And we're not going to encourage our American auto manufacturers to make more gasoline-efficient cars, which they would do in a heartbeat. We have one of the best auto industries in the world, very inventive, very creative. Think what we could have. I mean, I drive a car that gets 54 miles to the gallon on average and will hold 5 passengers and can lay rubber. And I wish it was made in Detroit. Toyota does make cars in the United States, but soon we will be seeing hybrid cars coming out of Detroit, I'm sure. But boy, we could be doing so much more. The government could be pushing this. But instead of saying that, the neocons have been saying, well, you know, we've got this economy. It's built on oil. And where's the world's oil? It's in Iraq. I mean, we're certainly not freeing people from Robert Mugabe in Zimbabwe, where he's killed 2 million of his own people in the last 10 years, where he's killed probably 500,000 just in the last 2 years. We're certainly not freeing people from the prison state of Burma. No, they don't have any oil. So let's go back to an earlier time when it was actually considered honorable that the United States should seek self-sufficiency and only intervene around the world when it was the moral thing to do. Franklin Roosevelt.
We're not a warlike people. We've never sought glory as a nation of warriors. We're not interested in aggression. We are not interested, as the dictators are, in looting. We do not covet one square inch of the territory of any other nation.
And then acknowledging that in the United States we have today millions, tens of millions of people who are eating dog food, who are going without medical care, who are who are unable to make it from day to day, who are suddenly, you know, they're just not on the radar screen of conservative talk radio, of the multimillionaires out there, but they're there. They're here.
I see one-third of a nation ill-housed, ill-clad, ill-nourished,
said Franklin Roosevelt.
Better the occasional fault of a government that lives in a spirit of charity than the consistent omissions of a government frozen in the ice of its own indifference.
I just had to share these with you. And frankly, I have to say, this radio program has been growing rapidly across the nation. There are other so-called liberal talk hosts that are getting getting shows and stations. You've been reading about it in the newspaper. You've been hearing them on the radio. The internet is full of them. America is waking up. We're seeing people talking back on television and in the look at the internet, the news media, our pamphleteering. Look at the best-selling books now. Franklin Roosevelt talked about how things go in cycles. And I really, truly believe, I have this just strong, strong feeling that we are standing at the edge of an absolutely critical, pivotal, and extraordinary time. A time filled with danger and also a time filled with extraordinary opportunity. If we can help Americans remember, simply remember, that our founders created a government, not an it, not something that, as Grover Norquist says, should be drowned in the bathtub. No, that's fine for the old Soviet Union or some dictatorship. Yeah, you know, there are governments that are its, that go after their people. But our founders created a government, a nation, as Lincoln said, of the people, by the people, for the people, conceived in liberty, that our government is us. How, the hate America rhetoric that is coming out of the conservatives is mind-boggling to me. The vitriol against a government which is you and me. And in its place, well, let's put private corporations. Yes, private corporation, let's privatize things. We don't need no stinking government. I have to share something with you about that. But first, this is Franklin Roosevelt's, one of his more famous statements. And I really feel that we are here again.
There is a mysterious cycle in human events. To some generations, much is given. Of other generations, much is expected. This generation of Americans has a rendezvous with destiny.
Now, many people think that he said that about World War II. He did not. That is from his July 27th, 1936, as I recall, his acceptance speech in Philadelphia at the Democratic National Convention, in which he was nominated to run again for President of the United States. I may have the year wrong, but the date of my recollection is it was July 27, 1936. And what he was talking about was restoring to America, out of the Great Depression, was restoring to America a sense of community, of caring. Well, as you heard a moment ago, better the occasional mistakes of a government grounded in compassion than the consistent omissions of a government frozen in the ice of its own indifference. And so we have government that is we the people, in theory. And yes, we have some plutocrats and autocrats, the Bush administration, who want to tell us, no, sorry, it's not your government, really. We're going to take it. Sorry. And, you know, for example, here, this from the Economist last week, the British paper. This spring, the White House Office of Management and Budget ordered all federal agencies to review by the end of fiscal 2003 the 15% of jobs they deem, quote, commercial, end quote, or suitable to be done by private contractors. 850,000 people hold, quote, commercial government jobs, according to this administration. The Economist points out that this is costly and morale-sapping, that privatization threatens agencies' institutional memories, and some also see it as an anti-union ploy. I'm telling you, that's the bottom line here. But it's already happening. I mean, the Park Service is already outsourcing $1 billion a year worth of work. Around 28,000, reading now from The Economist, around 28,000 contractors and concessionaires work in the Park System, as do 100,000 or so volunteers. Some 850 vacant posts have been turned into private sector contract jobs, a move one trade union is challenging. Good luck. It's time for us to remember what government in a democracy is. And bring it back. 1-800-TALK-YES is our number, 1-800-825-5937. This is Tom Hartman on the IE America Radio Network. It is 13 minutes before the hour, and Terry in California is on the line. Hey, Terry, welcome to the Tom Hartman program.
Hello again, Tom. Tom?
Yeah.
Hi.
What's up?
Well, a few years ago when this guy that's in the White House that thinks he's the president took over, I started feeling really guilty about my government. I had this sense of that this was my government, my country, and it wasn't right. And I didn't feel I felt bad about it. I started exploring and studying this thing, and I came to the conclusion that there's a shadow government here. And I was confirmed. I watched a documentary on the Free Speech TV that was made in England, and they documented the shadow government and how it started in this country. Came out of World War II with Bush and the Dulles brothers, inference was implied by Eisenhower with his reference to the military industrial complex, and I trace it all the way down to the Bush and his crew and how they have undercut our country. You know, when our country all the way along the line, when Jimmy Carter came in. I mean, there's references, of course, to the Kennedy assassination with Bush and his being in the locale at the time. And then when Carter came into the presidency, one of the first things he did was fire like about 600 or 700 CIA people, including Bush. And these guys have basically been on the rise ever since World War II. And I think when you start talking about our government and how, you know, this is not what we are, I don't think we are. We're not really addressing that we don't have a government anymore. There's a shadow government that's taken over our government.
So what are we going to do about it, Terry? Are we going to sit around and complain, or are we going to get out and get active?
Well, I think that one of the first things that we've got to do is get our media back so we can communicate among ourselves so we'll understand what's happening. You know,
you're talking on part of it right now.
I know, and I think it's important. What you're doing is unbelievably important, and I think but exposing that we're fighting a shadow government, that there's an alternative force at work here, and recognizing it and pointing it out and understanding that history, I think, is critical right now.
Yeah, I agree. There's also, there's also another shadow government that I figured at first that you were going to be talking about, which is the government that this government has put in place in case Washington, D.C. gets wiped out. But that's a whole other discussion. Terry, we just need to get active. We need to get loud. Thank you for calling. I appreciate it. Jim in Santa Fe, hang on. I'll pick up your call right after this break. Stay tuned. This is Tom Hartman. We'll be right back.
To create a real democracy in this country, we need to sit down and talk with other people. Democracy begins with conversation. But how do we begin the conversation? The Women's International League for Peace and Freedom has a 10-week study guide called Challenge Corporate Power, Assert the People's Rights, to help you get the conversation started in your community. It's free on the web at WILPF.org or call 215-563-7110.
Dermarest, the psoriasis solution, asks,
what's complete freedom? For me, it's an open road with the top down. It's my bare arms getting warmed by the sun. It's my bare arms without a trace of psoriasis.
Complete freedom. Brought to you by the complete relief of Dermarest psoriasis. Unlike brands which only relieve itching and inflammation, Dermarest psoriasis also removes the embarrassing scales, allowing healthy skin to grow.
Healthy skin? That's complete freedom.
Dermarest, the psoriasis solution.
If you think people are more important than corporations, you need to see The Progressive Populist. Twice a month, we feature columnists such as Jim Hightower, Molly Ivins, and other plutocrat pluckers from around the country. We'll send you a free sample copy if you'll call us toll-free 1-800-205-7067 or see our website at populist.com. That's 1-800-205-7067 or populist.com or The Progressive Populist, the newspaper for Main Street USA.
This is Eric Muller reporting from Chopper 5.
Cut!
News happens fast. Can I afford to let a cold slow me down? Not up here. When I'm achy, with a stuffy nose and a sore throat, I take Advil Cold and Sinus. It's got the power of Advil to handle tough pain, plus a hard-working decongestant. That's why they call it Advil Cold and Sinus.
Quick, over to the highway!
I call it fast relief for a reporter on the fly.
For tough colds, advance to Advil Cold and Sinus. Use as directed.
I guess I better let the dog in.
Like the small dog that rules the house, Small Dog Electronics is the small computer company that really rules when it comes to customer service. Small Dog Electronics is your authorized Apple reseller in Waitsfield, Vermont. Sure, you can buy your computer out of a catalog, but how do you know you're really getting what you want or what you need? At Small Dog, they don't work on commission. Their only motivation is making sure you're a happy customer. Put your business on the leading edge with the world's fastest computer, the new Macintosh G5. You'll finish the job ahead of the pack, and automatic security updates lock out viruses. That's speed and dependability that will keep you focused on your customers instead of sitting on hold with tech support.
I guess you want to get on the couch, huh?
Like the small dog who everybody makes room for, Small Dog Electronics is big on customer service. Small Dog Electronics. Check them out on the web at smalldog.com or at their showroom on Route 100 in Waitsfield.
No way. You're not getting on the bed.
Show. Adam, welcome to the Tom Hartman Program. What's up?
I just find it that you guys are really cynical to believe that Cheney or Bush or any of these guys would risk troops' lives to make money. You must think that these guys are really evil people.
If you go back to 1998 and read the Project for a New American Century, what they were saying basically, if we're going to continue to consume 25% of the planet's oil, then our security is at risk if we can't secure our oil supplies. So we have to secure the oil supplies by seizing control of the Middle East.
Is this what you say they said, or is this what they had stated in a policy and in a
this
in
is
a
what they
contract?
Said.
Why is this on CNN every night?
It was on CNN a year ago. It was on CNN in 1998. They wrote a letter to Bill Clinton demanding that he attack Iraq, and that letter has been a public document ever since. And it was signed by all of these guys who are now in the administration.
The Tom Hartman Show, Monday through Friday, noon to 3 p.m. Eastern Standard Time on IE America Radio Network.
We have this representative sampling from yesterday addressed to Dudley Do-Right.
Yes, sir, Inspector!
You must be a miserable person. You think everybody is out to screw you. You don't like the Republicans, George W., government authority, police, fire, CIA, FBI, NSA, phone companies, airlines, successful people. The list goes on and on and on and on and on.
On the IE America Radio Network.
There's a new voice on IE America Radio Network. It's Never Better with Marina Colby. Sundays from 11 a.m. till noon Eastern on the IE America Radio Network. Never Better is an energetic show that explores and analyzes how you can be more successful people at work and in relationships. So make sure you tune in to Never Better with Marina Colby every Sunday from 11 a.m. till noon Eastern Time on IE America Radio Network. For more information, go to IEAmericaRadio.com.
Bringing you uncommon sense, you're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
we take the red pill or the green pill? This is Tom Hartman, and hopefully our program is the pill that will help you escape the matrix. Brought to you by Small Dog Electronics and the Organic Wine Company. Our program today produced by Louise Hartman here in Vermont and Joe McPherson down in Atlanta, Georgia. And engineered by Steph Stryker and Char Jones in Detroit. Two of the finest engineers on earth. And 1-800-TALK-YES, our number, Jim in Santa Fe is on the line. Hey, Jim, welcome to the Tom Hartman program.
Thank you, Tom. Thanks for all the education you do and your show, and especially the Founding Fathers and all the quotes. I don't agree with FDR. I think FDR created the Depression, and if you look at a book that's called Upcoming Battle, it's been documented for 100 years how the banking system, ever since we left Europe, has tried to get America. Nothing's going to change until we print our own money again, and we never get to the cause of who's backing everything. You know,
you say, again, we have never printed our own money, Jim. I mean, that was the original battle between Alexander Hamilton and James Madison. Hamilton wanted there to be a bank, and it got put out of business after about 12 years.
But we did back our own money for a while until the Bank of England came in and took over. And how can we ever get out of a recession or a depression or the national debt when we owe it to the banks who are you know, that's their job to make money. As soon as we get out of
it, are you saying the Fed is controlled by the Bank of England?
Well, by the banks of Europe, we don't have anything to do with it except we put a couple of key pawns on the board.
Well, the Fed is actually controlled by its member banks. There are 12 Federal Reserve banks. There's the one closest to me is the one in Boston.
Private bankers, though.
That's right, and they're private corporations, and you can buy stock in them.
Yeah, but the corporations
and you too can own
never,
the Fed.
Yeah, but the corporations are never going to let us get out of debt. They're in the business of making money.
Oh,
they're controlling. They're like you said, the corporate feudalism that's going on. They're controlling it. They want to control the world.
I agree.
Where does all the money go? I mean, every time we have a war, our taxes are created, and people forget what it's for. We never had property taxes. We never had IRS.
Yeah. Yeah, it's gotten stranger and stranger, hasn't it, Jim? Thursday is usually conspiracy day. We didn't have a conspiracy guest on, but we've certainly had our conversations, haven't we? Jim, I appreciate the call. Thank you for those kind words from Santa Fe. This is Tom Hartman. Thanks for joining us today, and tune in tomorrow, same time, same place.
From Kuznets, Tiananmen Square. It's coming from the field that this ain't exactly real, or it's real but it ain't exactly there. From the war against disorder, from the sirens night and day, from the fires of the...
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman program on the IE America Radio Network. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.
Copyright 2003.
Another audio clip from the production meeting. Doug Steffen.
What production meeting?
The drive. You know how many radio stations we're on? We must be doing something right, guys.
Imagine if we really tried.
Doug. Yeah, yeah.
Yet we don't care, and it shows.
Doug Steffen's the game.
On the IE America Radio Network.
Do you dig your dog, but your dog digs your rose bushes?
Does Hole in the Head have your Oscar?
Is your cat doing a Tarzan swing from your drapes?
Is your python pooped?
Do you hate your folks because they spent your college tuition on a European vacation?
Jamie, what does that have to do with animals?
I don't know. I kind of ran out of stuff.
Now, come on, this is a commercial for a major radio network. We should do better.
Animal Talk, Sunday nights on the IE America Radio Network.